Representative Dave Zwanitzer, you may have privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If I could direct your attention up into the north balcony. Up in the north balcony, that lovely lady with the movie camera up there is my daughter-in-law. That suspicious-looking gentleman holding the young man is my son, Ty, my daughter-in-law, Shauna. And that young fellow up there today, ladies and gentlemen and members of the body, is his first birthday. His name is Aiden. Aiden. So, if you want to sing a little happy birthday. Happy birthday to you.
We're at that order of business of consideration of Joint Conference Committee reports. Ladies and gentlemen, you had a report this morning that had the request to concur and then the JCC reports. There is a revised list for the JCC, the Joint Conference Committee reports. There are now five on the list. The first report for our consideration is Joint Conference Committee number one, report on House Bill 11, Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I move adoption of Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 on House Bill 11. Ladies and gentlemen, very briefly, time's at a premium this afternoon. The puppies were at it again. They inserted in three places in this bill the word harassing. We didn't like harassing, and the Senate agreed to take it out. Then there has been quite a bit of question on... In the bill, it said it's unlawful for any person to knowingly or recklessly allow or direct a dog which he owns or is under his control to injure or threaten a big game animal, and that knowingly or those two words have proven to be difficult, and so they are deleted. So under the resolution from the Joint Conference Committee, it now says it is unlawful for any person to recklessly allow or direct a dog. I'll stand for any questions, Mr. Chairman, or Mr. Speaker, and otherwise I urge adoption of the Joint Conference Report.
Anyone else for their first time? For your second time. We are voting on Joint Conference Committee number one, report to House Bill 11. A majority of the elected members is required to adopt the report. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson. Aye. Bagby. Aye. Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Bonner,
aye.
Brechtel,
aye.
Brown,
aye.
Buchanan,
aye.
Byrd,
aye.
Kennedy,
aye.
Carson,
aye.
Childers,
aye.
Cohey,
aye.
Connolly,
aye.
Kraft,
aye.
Davison,
aye.
Dirks,
aye.
Edmonds,
aye.
Esquivel,
aye.
Gilmore,
aye.
Gingery,
aye.
Goggles excused, Hales,
aye.
Hallinan,
aye.
Hammonds, Harshman, excused.
Harvey. Aye.
Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Jorgensen.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Lebno.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
McComey.
Aye.
Mercer.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Miller, excused. Millen.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Peasley.
Aye.
Pedersen.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Philp.
Aye.
Korberg. Roscoe,
aye.
Simlick,
aye.
Shepperson, Stewart,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Thompson,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Wallace,
aye.
Swanitzer Dan,
aye.
Swanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
Shepperson excused. I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 55 ayes, 1 no, 4 excused.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee No. 1, Report to House Bill 11. The next report for our consideration is Joint Conference Committee No. 1, Report on House Bill 190. Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would move adoption of the Joint Conference Committee Report No. 1 to House Bill 190. Our friends across the way agreed to go back to the House language requiring 90 consecutive days of non-payment before triggering any beginning of the suspension process. Also, the good LSO staff discovered a technical problem with one of the other Senate amendments, and that was corrected. And with that, I would urge your adoption of the report.
Anyone else for their first time? We're voting on Joint Conference Committee No. 1, Report to House Bill 190. A majority of the elected members is required to adopt the report. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson. Aye. Bagby. Aye. Barbudo. Aye. Berger. Aye. Blake.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
No.
Byrd.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Carson. Childers,
aye.
Cohey,
aye.
Connolly,
aye.
Kraft,
aye.
Davison,
aye.
Dirks,
aye.
Edmonds,
aye.
Esquivel,
no.
Gilmore,
aye.
Gingery,
aye.
Goggles excused, Hales,
aye.
Hallinan,
aye.
Hammonds,
aye.
Harshman excused, Harvey,
aye.
Illaway,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Jorgensen,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Lubno,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
McComey,
aye.
Mercer,
no.
Meyer,
aye.
Miller excused, Millen,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Peasley,
aye.
Patterson,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Philp,
aye.
Korberg,
oh, no.
Korberg, no, Roscoe,
aye.
Semlich,
aye.
Shepperson excused, Stewart,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Thompson,
aye.
Throne, Wallace,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dan,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Brechtel, aye to no. Patton, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 50 ayes, 6 noes, 4 excused.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee No. 1, Report to House Bill 190. The next report for our consideration is Joint Conference Committee No. 1 on House Bill 226. Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I move adoption of Joint Conference Committee Report No. 1 on House Bill 226 and urge your concurrence. The issue in this bill was the percentage above the basic index on state grazing fees. The House was at 100% of whatever the index was to be the maximum grazing fee. The Senate was at 150%, and after we left a little blood on the floor, we're at 120%. So the state grazing fee could be bid up, but it is capped. It would be capped under this bill at 120% of the index that is prescribed in the bill, and I would urge your concurrence.
Chairman Landon.
I just had a question about that. That what the goal was comparing the lease rates on state land so that they would be comparable, at my understanding, to the lease rates on private land of similar attributes and similar production. And then there was some funny language in there that it was on comparable to lease rates on state land, and that was removed, and then it was said comparable to lease rates on Wyoming land. Did you ever get an understanding of what that was?
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, we did get an answer on that, and we did adopt, and I just neglected to say it because we didn't really consider it an issue anymore, but we did adopt the Senate amendment, which based it on values for the state, district, or county, whichever is most localized and available, as determined by the National Agricultural Statistics Service, utilizing grazing rates and cropland rates.
We are voting on Joint Conference Committee number 1 report to House Bill 226. A majority of the elected members is required to adopt the report. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bagby.
Aye.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Cohey.
Aye.
Connolly. Kraft,
aye.
Davison,
aye.
Dirks,
aye.
Edmonds, Esquivel,
aye.
Gilmore,
aye.
Gingery,
aye.
Goggles excused, Hales,
aye.
Hallinan,
aye.
Hammonds conflict, Harshman excused, Harvey,
aye.
Illaway,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Jorgensen,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Lubno,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
McComey,
aye.
Mercer,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Miller excused, Millen,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Peasley,
aye.
Pedersen,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Philp,
aye.
Korberg,
aye.
Roscoe,
aye.
Semlick,
aye.
Shepperson excused, Stewart,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Thompson,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Wallace,
aye.
Swanitzer Dan, Swanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 55 ayes, 4 excused, 1 conflict.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee number 1 report to House Bill 226. The next report for our consideration is Joint Conference Committee number 1 on House Bill 287. Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Mr. Speaker, I move Joint Conference Committee report on House Bill 287 in reference to Message 350 and ask for your aye vote. We went and met with the Senate, and we deleted any reference in there. There was a reference in there to which would allow the state to collect its share of mineral royalties because we felt that that went outside of the scope of the bill. So it now reads as the language you see there. It is the intent of the legislature that the state of Wyoming should encourage the United States government to lease helium as it does other minerals. So this bill, if it would pass, would allow taxation of helium that is leased through an agreement rather than a lease itself. And it would pertain to federal lands. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I appreciated the chance to be on the negotiating team, and this resolves the reservations that I had about the bill, and I also recommend that we concur.
Anyone else for their first time, for your second time? We are voting on Joint Conference Committee number 1 report to House Bill 287. A majority of the elected members is required to adopt the report. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bagby.
Aye.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Cohey.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison. Dirks,
aye.
Edmonds, Esquivel,
aye.
Gilmore,
aye.
Gingery,
aye.
Goggles excused, Hales,
aye.
Hallinan,
aye.
Hammonds,
aye.
Harshman excused, Harvey,
aye.
Illaway,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Jorgensen,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Lubno,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
McComey,
aye.
Mercer,
aye.
Meyer, Miller excused, Millen,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Peasley,
aye.
Pedersen,
aye.
Pedersen,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Philp,
aye.
Korberg,
aye.
Roscoe,
aye.
Semlick,
aye.
Shepperson excused, Stewart,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Thompson,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 56 ayes, 4 excused.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee number 1 report to House Bill 287. The next report for our consideration is Joint Conference Committee number 1 on Senate File 32. Chairman Semlich.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move adoption of the Joint Conference Report number 1 to Senate File 32. In the discussion of the bill in the House, we put on a couple committee the whole amendments. One of them was to biennialize the funding for the veterinarian position that was in the bill, and the second one had to do with some language in regard to funding and language in regard to information technology specialist for the livestock board to complete their work in with their brand inspections. We split the difference with the body down the hall. We made an argument for the technology plan and the position, and they went with that. They were reluctant to go with the biennializing the funding, and so in the spirit of compromise and cooperation, I would urge you or ask you to vote aye on this Joint Conference Committee report. Thank you.
Anyone else for the first time or second time? We're voting on Joint Conference Committee number 1 report to Senate File 32. A majority of the elected members is required to adopt the report. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bagby.
Aye.
Barbuto.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Cohey.
Aye.
Connolly. Kraft, Davison, Dirks, Edmonds, Esquibel, Gilmore, Gingery, Goggles excused, Hales, Hallinan, Hammonds, Harshman excused, Harvey, Illaway, Yagi, Jorgensen, Landon, Lockhart, Lubno, Madden, McKim, McComey, Mercer, Meyer, Miller excused, Millen, Moniz, Patton, Peasley, Pedersen, Peterson, Philp, Korberg, Roscoe, Semlick, Shepperson excused, Stewart, Stubson, Teeters, Thompson, Throne, Wallace, Zwanitzer Dan, Zwanitzer Dave, Mr. Speaker. I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 56 ayes, 4 excused.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee number 1 report to Senate File 32. We're at that order of business of signing of enrolled acts.
House Enrolled Act number 69 being original House Bill 173, an act relating to the Wyoming Teacher Shortage Loan Repayment Program, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 69, being original House Bill number 173. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act number 70, being original House Bill 215, an act relating to taxation and revenue, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 70, being original House Bill number 215. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act number 71, being original House Bill 42, an act relating to burials and cremations, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 71, being original House Bill number 42. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act number 72, being original House Bill number 104, an act relating to elections, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 72, being original House Bill number 104. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act number 73, being original House Bill 156, an act relating to economic development, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House and Rolled Act number 73, being original House Bill number 156. Have so signed.
House and Rolled Act number 74, being original House Bill number 289, an act relating to child protection cases, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House and Rolled Act number 74, being original House Bill number 289. I have so signed.
House and Rolled Act number 75, being original House Bill 297, an act relating to crimes and offenses, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House and Rolled Act number 75, being original House Bill number 297. I have so signed.
House and Rolled Joint Resolution number 2, being original House Joint Resolution number 8, a joint resolution urging Congress to oppose federal legislation that interferes with the state's ability to direct or transport the processing of horses, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House and Rolled Joint Resolution number 2, being original House Joint Resolution number 8. Excuse me.
Senate Enrolled Act number 46, being original Senate file number 37, an act relating to standards for antifreeze and petroleum products, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 46, being original Senate file number 37. I have so signed.
Senate Enrolled Act number 47, being original Senate file 13, an act relating to game and fish, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
About to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 47, being original Senate file number 13. I have so signed.
Senate Enrolled Act number 48, being original Senate file 57, an act relating to rental vehicle agencies, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 48, being original Senate file number 57. I have so signed.
Senate Enrolled Act number 49, being original Senate file 60, an act relating to the National Guard, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 49, being original Senate file number 60. I have so signed.
Senate Enrolled Act number 50, being original Senate file number 125, an act relating to administration of government, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 50, being original Senate file number 125. I have so signed.
Senate Enrolled Act number 51, being original Senate file 76, an act relating to motor vehicles, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 51, being original Senate file number 76. I have so signed.
Senate Enrolled Act number 52, being original Senate file 144, an act relating to taxation and revenue, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 52, being original Senate file number 144. I have so signed. With that order of business of consideration of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House resolve itself into committee of the whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The House is resolved into committee of the whole. Representative Lubnow.
Committee of the Whole will please come to order. First bill for our consideration is Senate File 24. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 24, introduced by the Labor Committee, an act relating to health insurance regarding health care reform demonstration project. This bill was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, which recommended that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Bonner, Esquivel, Goggles, Hallinan, Landon, Millen, Shepperson. No, Harvey. Excused, Davison. Signed, Representative Landon, Chairman. The bill was further referred to Committee Number 2 Appropriations, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Harshman, Pedersen, Phillips, Stewart. No, Hammonds. Excused, Jorgensen. Signed, Representative Berger, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Landon.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate file do pass. There is a Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, which I will also move at this time. I think that I will explain that as we go through the bill. First off, ladies and gentlemen, I just want to give out a little background about the bill and what it does. Basically, it's looking for methods to reform and get some cost control on these programs, whether or not they are Medicaid or whether they're private insurance, to try to put some methods of cost control in the health system. We're likely to get a health reform initiatives from the federal government this next year. And this would provide the state of Wyoming with some experience in this area on trying a couple initiatives to see if there are things that we want to work into the Medicaid program. This is not conventional insurance. This uses incentives, education, and consultation to get both the participants and the providers to act in ways that produce better health and lower cost. You'll see as we go through the bill there's initiatives on preventative services. They're more expansive than what's in your typical insurance, and they provide incentives for participants to get preventative services. There's an element in there on co-pays, and you'll see where it's higher for specialist and surgical care and lower for primary care, because that's what we want people to seek is primary care. You'll see an initiative for a personal health account in there. We'll talk about a medical home concept, clinical prevention services. Those help participants with serious or expensive illnesses avoid unnecessary care and minimize the cost of care. Other features that we'll cover in the bill are high deductible insurance for serious problems. This bill is going to be administered through an existing program, and that's the Wyoming Health Insurance Pool. It's limited to 500 participants. It's going to be evaluated by a separate agency, and that is the Department of Health. They are not involved in setting it up. And it is sunsetted in 2014. I have passed out onto your desk three different sheets of paper that were that have a very dark top across the top and then some columns on the first page. I just thought that this might interest you a little bit. This first page divides the cost of health care into various quartiles. And so there's five of those here, quintiles, I should say. And that's 20% each in numbers of the population. And you can see how the lower quintiles, and this is cost quintiles of total cost, how 95% of the people fall within these lower amounts as far as the cost of health insurance or of health purchases during a year. What it amounts to is you can see that 5% of the population require very expensive services. And so this is going to be looking particularly at some of these more expensive services and see if we can drive the cost down within that population. The second page I thought might be as much as anything interesting to yourselves as well as to what the statistics are in Wyoming for doing various preventative activities. Colonoscopy, for one, it's recommended that if you're over 50 years old, you should have one of those every 10 years. And the rate is that you hope the population to have is 10%, and you can see in Wyoming 6% of the women and 6% of the men are getting that. That goes on for blood tests, for lipid panels, or lipid panels, which is for heart disease and diabetes. I thought this last one was particularly interesting, this preventative office visits. It's recommended that everybody go in and have one of those every 1 or 2 years. The actuality in the state is the women are doing pretty well. About 34% of them do go in for a regular office visit and preventative checkup every 1 or 2 years. But look at what men do. I guess we're just indestructible. Only 7% of us go in and do that. So if nothing else is brought out today, go home and increase that 7%. Then the last page on that handout is to show you the cost breakdown, and we'll get to that in the bill, but I thought you might like to see a summary of that. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to go right to the bill now, because I think that's the way to explain the proposal, is just run through the bill explain what's being talked about here. Basically, I'm going to start on page 2, where this is a health care reform demonstration project is created. It's been given the name of Healthy Frontiers. On page 3, it involves a benefit design, and that's going to be a schedule of health care benefits that are going to go along with this project. One of those benefits are going to be clinical prevention services. That'll be set forth in that benefit design, and that's to provide information, education, and decision support for individuals who have specific diseases. And this is trying to focus on chronic diseases that people really need to have to do a lot of self-managing for and give them the strategy to do that. Another concept is found on page 5 with the medical home. And that's where a physician, an advanced practitioner of registered nursing, and their team are going to be working together to strengthen the provider-patient relationship and practice these prevention, screening, and advice. You can see that some of the amendment, a lot of this amendment, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, is wordsmithing, and it starts there on page 4, lines 6 and 7, where we just go in and more specifically define what we want this team to deliver in the medical home concept. On page 5, we talk about personal health accounts. These are very much like health savings accounts. They're cash accounts out of which participants can pay for co-pays and other health care. On page 6, we start getting into the benefit design and operation. There's going to be a benefit design committee put together, and this will be from 3 to 7 people. They will create and modify the benefit design, and it'll include the following, starting on page 7, preventative services. We talked a little about that in the definitions, screening, wellness exams. The participant is going to be required to participate in these specific prevention services. That's going to be a condition of being eligible for this for any state contributions into their personal health account. That's the incentive for you to participate in these preventative services. Then part of that benefit is going to be the use of a medical home, starting on the bottom of page 7 and going on to line 8. Where we're going to actually provide more reimbursement to those physicians and their teams who provide advice and consulting services. There are some amendments as well on this page. Those two are primarily cleanup amendments that'll come at the bottom of the page that make the language read better. One of the things that we're looking to add is clinical prevention services in the middle of line 8. And that's where it will assist participants with chronic disease or heart health conditions to get the information and the resources they need to better manage their illness. This clinical prevention, in the rewording of that, is it's going to provide assistance in to the participant for getting the care he needs, help the participant take steps to improve his health, help the participant avoid care that does more harm than good, and try to do so in an atmosphere that minimizes the cost of care. Then we talk a little about the personal health account that will be in the benefit. This will be a contribution from the participant with matching state contribution, and that contribution that participants make will be on a sliding scale. And the account can be used for various things listed in A and further on. That these are some of the characteristics of the account, that the individual can retain the balance. That's kind of a key initiative in this, is that this is their money, and I think that a person has to feel that this is my money before they have any drive to be efficient and save some of that and use it wisely. It is going to allow the use of this for healthcare related needs, and if the account balance exceeds a certain amount, then the balance or if the account remains the way it is for a certain amount of time, then the account can be used to pay medical co-payments and deductibles for premiums for other family members. Going over to page 5, the account may provide, or the state will retain interest in the account to ensure that the account reverts, say if the individual dies or after an expiration of 10 years after the participant leaves. And the account may roll over into a health savings account. And the account also is starting on line 11, there's provisions that it's going to minimize any adverse federal health consequences. It may allow the state to advance money. It may be that the state may advance money into this account to meet deductibles, and that will be repaid over time. The benefits will also provide a high deductible insurance plan that you see on page 11. And the premium cost for that will be shared. The participant is going to be expected to pay some on the premiums, and it will have deductibles and co-payments. Those too can be paid from a personal health account. The healthcare services, though, for preventative packages, is those will not require a co-payment. The co-payment will be lower for primary care, and it'll be more for specialty care. And those co-payments will be on a sliding scale over on the top of page 12. We're going to try to set up the benefits in such a way that individuals will be incentivized to join this project and leave Medicaid. And then it'll also be set up in such a way that it'll create an incentive to leave this system and go into any employer-provided health coverage. We added some amendments on the middle of page 12 where it referred to that this insurance plan can be provided directly by the project, it could be purchased from the private sector, or it could be provided through the Wyoming Health Insurance Pool. We wanted to make sure that if it was, that it would not affect any of the current plans that the Wyoming Health Insurance Pool provides for those individuals who have previous conditions and can't find any insurance anywhere else, who are now getting their insurance from the Wyoming Health Insurance Pool, the high-risk pool. We want this to be a standalone program. The benefit package can also provide financial or other incentives to encourage participation in the other features of this program, including preventative services and the clinical prevention that I talked about earlier. We're trying to incentivize that. So this benefit design is going to be recommended by the board. And then upon approval from the governor, there's an amendment there also maybe there's not. We considered that. and after approval to the governor, then that's what sets up the benefit designs. Any amendments later on can be made approved by the board. Starting on little D, the Wyoming Health Insurance Pool is the administrator, and they are going to choose the administrator of the project. And what that means is that's usually an insurance company that they contract with to do all the paperwork and pay the claims. And if they can't make an arrangement with those that they currently have, they can contract with a different administrator. It's a duty of that board to manage this so that the expenses do not exceed the appropriation. And they have the power to limit the enrollment to avoid overspending. That's in little e on the bottom of page 13. Going to 14, one of the powers of the board is they may purchase insurance or reinsurance in excess of the amount determined by the administrator. That's to protect the fund. We also deleted in that could be purchased. From the Wyoming Health Insurance Pool. We wanted to protect that pool. Going over, let's see. No, I'd said that wrong. I have two sets of amendments here. We did not delete that, but I think you will see an amendment coming up on that, because that's an important part, and there's going to be a committee of the whole amendment coming there. Concerning the plan of operation, it's very similar to the Wyoming Health Insurance Pool. As far as handling and investing of the accounts, that the provisions in implementing the benefit design, that's all going to be handled by the Wyoming Health Insurance Pool, maintaining public awareness on the bottom of 14, providing necessary audits at the top of 15, procedures for enrolling individuals. Then it comes to the eligibility section. In the eligibility section, this has to do with family income. It cannot exceed 200% of federal poverty level, and the individual has to be working at least 20 hours a week. And there's a chance that you may lose eligibility if you fail to continue to work, and there's further rules in that in the bill. The priority of the enrollment starts at the top of page 16. And one of the focuses in this is Wyoming currently has several different working programs to get people back to work and to train people to work. And so this is going to be aimed a lot towards those individuals, because as they get the skills to work and they go off Medicaid, oftentimes they start in low-paying jobs without insurance. So this will give them an insurance vehicle. The hope is that after a year or two, they move on and increase their job skills and move on into the private market and into employer-provided health programs. So individuals who have completed vocational readiness and work preparation programs through the Department of Workforce Services are the top priority. Individuals who are participating in Medicaid is the second priority. And individuals who have children in Medicaid or the state health insurance program, that's the third priority. Participants can elect family coverage. The spouse is not required to be working. The children, though, We'd like to keep them out of the program. If the children qualify, we want them enrolled in the state health insurance program or in Medicaid. At the top of 17, after enrollment for 3 months, the board is going to determine the maximum number of enrollments that are authorized in this bill, and they can limit that number. The eligibility is going to be reviewed at least once a year. If the participant's income exceeds 250%, they'll be disenrolled. If they aren't working 20 hours, they may be disenrolled. There is some language at the bottom of that if they become unemployed, the administrator may waive the work requirement for some unusual circumstances, and there is an amendment which addresses that as well. The initial enrollment on page 18, you can see it starts out at 500 people, and that can begin after approval of the plan. After July 1st of 2010, if the price of gas, it doesn't say that, but if that would be a factor, comes back up, and the program seems to be working, and we should have some data by then. The enrollment may allow an additional 2,500 people. The project is going to try to seek to get 500 of the people, if this expands, to be using community health centers, and 500 in primary health care providers practice, in private practice, just so we can compare how their medical home concept is working, and to demonstrate the statewide feasibility of this. The Department of Health is going to have primary responsibility in the evaluation part. They're going to report to the governor, to the Joint Labor Committee, and as well as them, the WIP board is also going to provide evaluation. Starting on B, it talks about the Department of Health evaluation and things they shall consider, that whether or not the participants are getting adequate health care, the extent of turnover and what its effect is on the management, and one of the standing committee amendments cleans up the language on that at the top of that. Whether the project provides health coverage at a cost that's less than other means, whether public or private, and comparing it to other programs, there's some criteria in little A and B there. Then little Romanet 4, one of the evaluation is the extent that it reduces the increase of medical cost. Little 5, the extent that the health participants and enrolled family members are improving. We amended C on line 20 that instead of July 1st, we would like that on October 1st of 2009, the Department of Health is going to provide the insurance commissioner and the WIP pool in that case with a list of data elements which the department determines are necessary to evaluate the project. And then the department has the ability to award contracts to collect the data. So we wanted to separate the program administrators from the data collectors. So that's why the Department of Health is doing the data collection and the WIP pool is administering the project. The administrator, you can see on page 21 on D, that they're going to be the ones that do the itemized project expenses. At intervals, the project is going to be compared to what their actual expectations were with experience. Itemized expenses are covered at the bottom of page 21, the cost of services, cost of the participants using the medical home and community health centers. Start over on line page 22, more service costs, those who use the medical homes from private providers. Cost of services and care and managed care and of those who are not using medical homes, we'd like to compare that as well. Other categories and expenses and other data necessary to evaluate the program. In little e, the administrator may use an outside consultant to identify any limitations on the statistical significance of this. At the top of page 23, there you can see there's some more amendments on the standing committee amendment. That's just to make that read better, that the Department of Health and the WIP board, after considering the ethics of using this, the feasibility and the ethics of using a control group, can use a control group to compare this to. The Department of Health is asked to provide the governor and the labor committee with an interim evaluation on October of 2001 and a final evaluation in December of 2013. And this report's going to include recommendations, whether the project should be discontinued, expanded, other data that might be necessary, other alterations needed. The program is sunsetted on page 14, that all participants are disenrolled on July 1st of 2014. Then the language on page 24 enables the WIP pool to manage the demonstration project and also to maintain a high deductible insurance plan and reinsurance. Finally, on section 3, it talks about the money, $50,000 from the tobacco settlement for the collection and evaluating the data to the Department of Health, and $2,154,000 is appropriated from the tobacco settlement, and that can only be expended for contracting with the board of directors of the WIP pool to implement the demonstration project. So that's, I hope that gives you a picture of what this project is, how it's set up, and some of the goals, and I'll just stand for questions at this point.
Representative Dirks?
Or perhaps Mr. Chairman, I should ask for any questions on the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, and if there are not, then ask for the question and dispose of that, and then go back to the bill.
Mr. Chairman, here's how I intend to proceed. Representative Dirks has a privilege of the floor, and then my intention was to go to Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, have the discussion on that amendment, if that's okay with you.
Thank you.
Representative Dirks.
Requesting privilege of the floor, Mr. Chairman.
Please proceed.
Members of the House, in the gallery up to our left is Professor William Burby, along with the EDAD 5800 Resources Manager doctoral students and the EDAD 5060 Capstone Master students from the University of Wyoming. They've spent the day here in Cheyenne visiting with the Governor, State Superintendent of Public Instruction, and at the Supreme Court with a review of the school funding litigation. Please welcome them to the House. Thank you.
Welcome to the People's House. We're now on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 24. Chairman Landon.
There are no questions on the Standing Committee Amendment. I have moved that. I would ask for the question.
Question having been called, you've heard the motion on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. Question being called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Chairman Landon, we have Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, I guess. Representative Childers, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman, question on the bill. On page 12, you talk about encouraging or incentives to leave Medicaid or other government programs, and then you have a sunset on the bill. And I guess my question is, both with Medicaid and other government programs, I know in the private sector, if you leave an insurance company, you aren't getting back with them once you're a certain age. So what's happening with Medicaid or other government programs? If we have a sunset on the bill, is there an ability for them to get back in those programs?
Representative Harvey. Chairman Landon.
Mr. Chairman, what we're trying to incentivize people to do is to move out of Medicaid and other programs, and yes, if they were to lose their work for an extended period of time and no longer be in this program, it's likely that then they would some might qualify for Medicaid, some might not. And the reason I say that is that on some of these work programs, they do qualify for Medicaid while they're in the work program. After they graduate from the work program, single adults or adults in the state of Wyoming who don't have children and who aren't disabled and so on, for the most part, do not qualify. There are no provisions for them to qualify for Medicaid.
Not a majority whip.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm also on page 12, and I guess I was concerned about the line starting, the sentence that starts on line 6 of page 12 that reads, "The benefit design shall seek to create an incentive to obtain a job that includes eligibility for employer-provided health care." I was just wondering what type of an incentive that you would anticipate that this benefit design would create, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a question about the funding coming from the Tobacco Settlement Trust Fund. It looks like this is a $2.1 million appropriation, one-time funding. And my understanding was you're going to put money into this with the hope that money coming from the feds would then replace this money, and this would just start the program up. My difficulty is with the Tobacco Settlement Fund, and just talking about that just for a minute, just because we've had long discussions about it in the Select Committee on Mental Health and Substance Abuse, because primarily most of the substance abuse programs are funded out of the tobacco funds. Just so everyone knows sort of how that works, back in 99 when this started, where it's what they called the MSA funds, Master Settlement Funds, coming from the tobacco companies, flows from the tobacco companies to us. We have two accounts. We have the Tobacco Settlement Fund and we have the Tobacco Settlement Income Fund. Originally in 99, the money flowed into the trust fund, and then there was an income fund some money could go into. We switched that in 2002, and actually the settlement coming from the tobacco companies goes straight to the income fund, and some money does sort of revert back to the trust fund, but essentially what we're doing is taking the money that's coming from the tobacco companies and instantly spending it. We're not actually saving it in a trust fund. We're just shipping it straight to different agencies. The difficulty is that if you look at what we did last year, the master settlement funds that came in was $21 million. So we got $21 million last year. The difficulty is that in 09 and 10, we'll be spending $37 million. In the biennium on all these different things that we're already funding with tobacco settlement, including $27 million for substance abuse. And there's a bunch of different things. Some of it goes to DOC, some goes to DFS, some comes to Department of Health Services. There is $56 million sitting in the trust fund, but the problem is because we're spending more than what's coming in from the tobacco companies, we're having to take it from the trust fund. My concern is that we keep taking from the trust fund income account. Pretty soon we're going to have to start making major cuts in our substance abuse expenditures if we keep taking from the tobacco settlement account. And I would just urge us to take a real close look at those tobacco settlement funds before we keep using them, because that the payments from the tobacco companies are going to start decreasing, because that master settlement doesn't go forever. And it would be better if we were actually putting the money into the trust fund and not just directly spending it. But that was the decision made back in 02. But again, my idea of the tobacco funds was to help stop people from smoking. And we're using it for a lot of things other than anything dealing with stopping smoking. That's just my concern, that the numbers don't seem to add up. But if this is just a one-time expenditure, I guess I can go with the $2.1 million if we agree it's a one-time thing and that we're counting on the Fed money coming in and replacing it.
Chairman Landon, would you like to respond to a couple of those questions?
Thank you. Madam Majority Whip, I would. First of all, let me respond to the most recent discussion concerning the Tobacco Trust Fund. Is the good chairman from The Judiciary Committee is exactly right, that and the Tobacco Trust Fund is made up of the trust itself. Monies flow out of that it earns into the income account, as well as new monies that come from the tobacco companies go into the income account. Right now, that income account is above water. It has, in fact, after all of these things that we have taken out of that income account, it's my understanding it has around $1.5 million still in it. The statutes of the Tobacco Trust Fund enable that monies to be spent for the improvement of health care within the state. So this falls within this. As far as extended funding goes, I'd like to just point out that this is, in my mind, this is a kind of a pilot program. We're going to test, do incentives work? We're going to test, do prevention, does prevention work? And so I think using the Tobacco Trust Fund's money is appropriate in this case to see whether these things work. Now, whether that would support a project in the future, I think the good chairman of the Judiciary is likely correct that we've already asked for mental health and substance abuse to be supported by that fund, and I doubt if it could handle the weight of both of them. But to test this idea, I think that, and that's where, quite frankly, there is a pool of money right now, and I think to test this idea, I think that's appropriate.
Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Madam Majority Whip. I'm looking at some language on page 7 of the bill in Romanet I, the last full sentence. And when you read it, it seems rather innocuous. But the more I think about it, the more I think it's creepy. It says, the benefit design team may provide that a participant meeting specified criteria shall be required to participate in specific preventative services as a condition of eligibility for all or part of the state contributions to the participant's personal health account. And so the question I have is, what are the criteria? What are the specific preventative services? Who decides? What are the requirements? And what rights do the patients have before they have their benefits yanked out from underneath them? It seems like if this is a pilot program and we intend to grow it to apply to everybody, what kind of limits do we have on the government telling us what we have to do?
Representative Harvey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I know that you guys are going to be really amazed to see me up at this microphone, and that's because I really need to talk with my hands today. I was the no vote on this bill in committee and continue to be, and I think that there are some fundamental flaws in the philosophy behind it. And the first one is that we're going to try and incent people through money, through gift cards, through offering them the opportunity for health care, and all of those incentives are external incentives. And let me, if I could just give you a little brief sociology lesson. I attended a course and read the book about helping people out of poverty. And he said, if you want to help them out of poverty, the first thing you need to understand is the mindset of poverty. And the first part of that is attitudes. And if you just take food, people who are in poverty, the question at the end of the meal is, did you get enough? If you take a middle-class family, the question at the end of the meal is, was it good? And if you take families that have a lot of resources, the question was, how was the ambiance? Was the presentation good? Did you enjoy your meal? And then if you take attitudes towards relationships, people in poverty depend on relationships. They depend on them to get their cars fixed, to get their kids tended, to get their needs met, basic needs that middle-class people pay for. They depend on barter and exchange. So they're willing to put up with flaws in relationships in order to get their needs met. People in the middle class view relationships as, hey, he's a great guy, honest, upstanding. I really like her because she's always just so kind and helpful. People of means review relationships as contacts, helping your child get a job, someone that can help achieve a goal that you've got. And then there's the attitudes about money. Payday for people in poverty. The first thing on their agenda is entertainment. Buy a lottery ticket, go to a movie, go out to eat, because they know that they're never going to take that big long vacation. They're never going to have the money to do so. So it's little bites of entertainment along the way. People in the middle class plan their vacations, and they save for it, and they work toward it. People in the middle class also have the most debt. And their money is based on acquiring things, houses, cars, kids' education. And people of means view a payday as a way to make money because they reinvest it. Money is a tool. Money works for them, and they reinvest. They save their money. They invest their money. And so if you understand where people are and the people that we're trying to incentivize to do these things, they don't manage their money well, mainly because they don't have a lot, and the money just goes so far. So we're trying to give external incentives to do this. So you give a $50 gift card because you met all of the criteria of all of the things that you've done. And we heard this in testimony from the designers of this program, that that would be one of the incentives, that they'd be in drawings for cards, that they would receive part of their health savings account. So you give someone who's lived their life in poverty a $50 gift card because they kept their chart of their blood sugars and they called in their weight every day and they did all of these things, and yet the first thing on their mind is entertainment. They're going to go out to eat, go to a movie and get some popcorn. I don't know. I'm just telling you that from the outside, incentives don't work. And I even take examples in my own life. You know, if someone tells me you really need to, if my doctor tells me you really need to lose 20 pounds, you'll feel better, you'll be healthier, your blood pressure will go down, life will be better for you if you lose 20 pounds. I yeah, you're right. I really need to do that, and I'm going to work on that. And I go home and I go on with life as usual. But then when I see a dress I really want, or I see something that motivates me from the inside, that is when I will lose 20 pounds, is when I want to. And even the Department of Health has a program to help their employees be healthy, and it works because they have the social structure to encourage each other. They work in the same office building. They get the same memos. They sign up for the programs together. They had a program, Just Don't Gain Weight Over the Holidays, and I don't know what it was called. But, you know, if everybody in the office building is of that same mindset, who's going to bring a plate of cookies to the coffee room? It's the group mentality of this is how you can do this together. People who have this opportunity in their work also have the pack it in their paycheck or the email every day. They have these reminders. They have someone sitting at the next desk that says, bring your tennis shoes tomorrow and let's go walk in the parking lot. Let's walk instead of eat. And you have that social support network that will help you, that maybe you're not fully incentivized to walk in the parking lot every day, but if you have somebody willing to walk with you, you can find a little courage inside of you to do it. That's the kind of motivation that it takes all of us to change. I don't believe that incentives from the outside work unless you have a social support network that helps and guides you through that. People who join weight loss groups do it because they have the network, and yet we're taking 500 people, if this program works as it's designed, and we're giving them support of outside people that are not their peers. So my first My first objection to this is that I believe that external incentives don't work. The second premise of this bill is that we should have a medical home for these 500 people. And what we should do with that medical home is that we should pay doctors more money for wellness checks and for extended visits, that when a person goes in, the doctor has more time to spend to do a foot check for diabetes, to do all of the things, and to sit down and talk to him about, you know, why you should quit smoking or why you should lose that 20 pounds. And the doctor then can become a support. I think that's a wonderful idea. And I certainly believe that we should pay people for the services that they render. And so if we give them a higher reimbursement, I think that's great. My community has 3 doctors, 2 PAs, and a nurse practitioner. And it takes three days to get an appointment to go in with a severe ear infection. Who is going to provide this service? How many of you have people in your communities that are screaming, saying, we don't have primary care? We don't have a family. The days of the family docs are few and far between. And so now we're asking people to double or triple the amount of time that they spend with their clients. And what, next year it'll take me 4 days to get in to see the doctor? I mean, we don't have enough providers to be able to do this on a large-scale basis. I also don't believe we have the consistency of medical providers across the state. And, you know, there's a fundamental part of me that says, and then my third objection to this bill, that says this is a pilot project. So here, would you like some insurance? Oh, never mind, we can't afford it, or it doesn't work. I just can't stand the thought of giving someone the possibility or the hope that they would have health insurance and then take it away. And looking at our budget and the discussions we've had on this floor, I cannot believe that we can sustain this kind of program. Which brings me to my fourth point, and that is that I don't believe fundamentally that government can fix this. And this is why I'm up at this microphone, is that I want to show you the chart that I have in my desk drawer that I wish I had here. And it is those payment plans for reimbursement for medical care. About half are government reimbursements, and that is Medicare and Medicaid. They do not cover the cost to provide medicine to people. The reimbursement rates are too low. They do not cover the cost. Over on this end of the spectrum are those who are private pay or have insurance. They pay this much for their medical care. Medicare and Medicaid pay this much. Half of the people are paying this much, and about 18% are paying this much, or this much, or this much, because every year it goes up, because inflation goes up, and these medical reimbursements are government health plans. The reimbursement does not cover the cost. And what's happening in the middle is that the unreimbursed care continues to grow on a yearly basis. When government gets involved, we screw it up. We don't pay our bills very well. We have to fight tooth and nail to get any kind of medical reimbursement raised on this floor, and I'm sure in Congress, and I'm sure on every floor in every state legislature across the grid, because it's never ending. And so people wring their hands and say, we can't do this. Should we do this? Is it our responsibility to do this? If we don't do it, who will? I don't know. We didn't break it. All we can really do is do a lot of little things along the way to make it better along the way, or to pay our bills for the programs that we've already bought into. We can increase our reimbursement rates and pay those bills that we have some say into. I got an email just a few minutes ago, and it's from a wife of a pediatrician. And she says, the new health care plan will cut Medicare and Medicaid payments to doctors. My husband may as well go to work as a plumber or an electrician and not have the legal medical risk that goes along with being a pediatrician. And goes on to describe quite a bit of her issues. And then at the end she says, if we don't get proper payment from the federal government, is the state of Wyoming willing to shore up the difference? People have expectations that when we sign into a program that we're going to do the right thing when we get there. I put a bulletin on your desk. I had this distributed. And I think that this is a real answer to health care reform, and it's through private industry. It's through ways that we can work. And, you know, some of these things include Medicaid and SCHIP. On our agenda today, there are some bills that I think will help. A medication disposable program, where if medication is going to be thrown away, could we redistribute it? This bill could help with that. Medicaid foot care. If we don't do it, it may lead to an infection and amputation. One amputation will pay the whole cost of that program. So that really is savings for us because we already do Medicaid. So why not do the things that save us money within Medicaid? There are things that we can do. There are things that we are doing, and they're good things. I think the SCHIP program is one of those Band-Aids that we can put on until things get fixed. But I don't think that we can take on this pilot project that is dealing with a segment of our population, and I recognize they don't have health insurance. I don't see how we can bring it as a promise that we can or will, and then turn around and take it away because we can't afford to do it. And with that, I would urge you to vote no on this bill.
Representative Pedersen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will try not to be repetitive of things we've heard. I am rising against the bill, and I'll state to you why. I think that we have a couple of things out in front of us. One is we have an incorrect document that we're working from, and that would be the golden rod that is telling us information that's based on months-old information, that I don't think we have an extra $2 million to put into a pilot program at this period in this state, in the fiscal state that we are in as a state. I don't see this as a known outcome, and I'm not willing to bet $2 million on it. I also think that raiding coffee cans is a little too soon, and that's what I'm referring to the Tobacco Trust Fund as. It's one of our coffee cans that I assure you we will need when we meet again, when we have to come back and get money out of that. But I also come to you at a little different perspective, and we've heard some of those things before. So let me tell you something else. If you turn to within your bill, you have page 9, and I'm looking there underneath Romanet 4, and within there it says that a personal health account funded by contributions from the participant with a matching state contribution is provided to the individual. And then the important part then comes in later on page 10 at the very bottom in section D there. I'm going to read this for you. A participant may, under conditions specified in the benefit design, roll the balance in the account into a health savings account or similar federally tax advantaged account after leaving the project. Here's our finance lesson for the day. So you sit there and you've got your 401k at your office, right? And you max it out. You say, well, where else can I put some money so I can save it and have it grow tax deferred? Well, I'm going to fill up my IRA. Well, hey, Mr. Financial Consultant, where else can I put some money so I can invest in stocks and bonds and so it will grow tax deferred? Let's open up a health savings account. Here's why. If you spend the money on health costs, the money then comes out non-taxable. If you spend the money on anything else, you just pay your income tax bracket. So you allow yourself a $3,000 contribution to that account that you can essentially fund a boat with when you retire. And we have a portability with this that to allow us to move into an account that essentially is free spending that we don't have governance on, and we are not controlling where this could possibly go to, and we're giving an instant 50% return to somebody on their initial, or sorry, an instant 100% instant return on their initial contribution. Put in 500, we'll give you 500. You can invest in anything you want. When they first invented health savings accounts, you had to invest in, you can invest in anything you want as long as it was a CD. Well, after a few years after that, now you can invest in stocks, you can invest in bonds, commodities, futures, mutual funds, hedge funds, anything you want that can go in those funds. It's an SEC-regulated instrument, or rather FINRA-related incident. I'm from an old school. This is the issue. I think this is the crux of one of the major problems of the bill is you're giving people money that is not guaranteed to be spent on health care. And here's my incentive. You've given me this money, and you say spend it on your health care. Well, I know that every time I don't go to the doctor's office for my bad tooth, it's more dollars that I save with this free money that was given to me that I can keep invested in the market, and I can keep growing for my boat that I'm going to have in 30 years or whatever. I don't know. I live in Wyoming, so I'm never going to get a boat, but I'm using it as an example. So that's the big issue. You may disincentivize people from actually even spending the money to begin with, and they can spend it on anything they want if they use the portability clause in this. And those are the two big issues. I don't think we have the money to do this, and if we do it, we're giving it for the wrong reasons.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very quickly, this is what the bill in front of us, this is the question it poses. This is a pilot project, this is a demonstration project, and this is the question. What we today, the state of Wyoming, pays on average $6,500 for every patient on Medicaid, $6,500. The premise of this particular pilot project is this. If we can help people to manage their health care, can we reduce that cost? The consultants, the designers of the program estimate that it can be done successfully, can be done to reduce by 35% the amount of money the state of Wyoming is already paying every year to a Medicaid patient. And the idea of the tobacco settlement money is this also. Here is a pot of money at least that we can draw upon to get that answer. There is no assurance. I will not tell you that with a certainty that we're going to find that we are able to contain those costs. But this is a group. This is a population that nobody's paid any attention to. Nobody has tried to help them manage their health care and, then, resultingly, their health care costs. So the question before you, do you think it's worthwhile to try to get that answer or not? And is the tobacco settlement funds a worthwhile source of that funding? That's essentially it. Thank you.
Representative Hallinan.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It seems like that some of the folks here are asking more of this health plan than could possibly be achieved by any health plan or any kind of reform. This is a trial. A trial to see if the usual incentives that work for the rest of us would work for some of these folks, some of these low-income folks, to help them advance from a position of dependence to the ability to be independent. The current plans are not working. The cost of health insurance, the cost of coverage is going up every year, every month, every week, and there's no sign of improvement anywhere. Now, I can certainly concur with anybody who wants to blame Medicare or federal government for our problems. I can see that every day where I work. But this is an attempt to see if there's another way. Now, it's possible that at the end of 2 years or however many years it takes to run this program, that we're going to say it didn't work. That's a possibility. But it's also a possibility that we're going to find out something about incentives and health care and what's the best way to find out. And there's really only one way to find out, and that's to try it. Because the present incentives are not working. If anybody here can stand up and say that what we're doing now is working, I don't think anybody would. So I won't say what I would say to that person. but let's give this a try. As far as the Tobacco Trust Fund, I think on another bill, and we talked about that some time ago, Wyoming is putting more money into tobacco prevention and treatment than the majority, at least the average of the states, and it's in the top tier of using that money for tobacco prevention. Most of the states put more of it into health care than we do. So really, we're responsibly using that money. And there's enough money in this plan to carry out what's here, we think. The premiums are going to come. Now, these folks are working people. That's who we're talking about insuring here in this pool. So they have the money to put some money into a premium. It's going to be on a sliding scale, so they're all not going to put in the same amount of money. So hopefully they'll put in enough money in this plan, plus the amount of state money that we're putting in here to make it solvent. And then we'll see if it works. It's strictly a trial. I wouldn't stand up here and say for sure it's going to work, and the sponsors over on the other side don't say it's going to work. But it's a new kind of a concept, and before we say we don't want to try anything new, we ought to look at what we've got and say if that's working. I don't think it is. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hales.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I need some help here with the math. If we are looking at these participants and we're requiring them to work 20 hours a week, and these are people that are at the 200% poverty level, we're looking at about $12 an hour. This is $240 a week. And I'm wondering how you can make people who are making that kind of money pay a deductible, pay into a health savings plan, and then they need to pay rent, they need to pay for food, and they need to pay for clothing. And the numbers, I just can't get them to add up. People in this category need to feed their families, they need to buy clothing, they need to buy school supplies, and they need to pay for rent. Those are their first priorities. And if you can go to the emergency room and get free health care, why would you take any of the other of your disposable income and put it into a savings plan? Thank you.
Chairman Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to address just a couple of the things because I think they haven't been addressed correctly. This is an incentive, not correctly, but fully. Part of this is an incentive-driven program. And incentives are a big part of the proposal. The question that the good representative from Campbell County raised on page 7 concerning those incentives to require the participant to avail themselves of these specific preventative services. That's a condition of eligibility. If you want this program, these are our expectations, that you're going to do the preventative care kind of actions that are necessary. And if you don't do that, quite frankly, we don't want you in the program. That we are not going to, how do we incentivize that? Well, we just won't make a state contribution into their personal health accounts. And that, I know that sounds tough, but I think that's the way that it's got to work, and in order to see whether this preventative services even works, is people have to do those things, and so they aren't getting something for nothing here. It's a preventative driven program. It's an incentive driven program. The good representative from Hot Springs County asked about the incentives that move the person off of this program into the employer-provided health coverage. I can't tell you exactly what those incentives are going to be. And a lot of these incentives we've left up to the health benefit design committee, but we did want to leave those in there because people react to incentives, and we do things for reasons of benefit, and so that's part of what's envisioned in the bill.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I did want to set the body's mind at ease a little bit about whether or not you're taking a chance on whether this is going to work or not, because actually this access and demonstration project is coming from a local project called Healthy Families Succeed. And what it does is it refers to the job ladder. It's a program to improve health and establish greater job skills for Wyoming families receiving state assistance. And it was born from the desire of the Wyoming state government to improve cross-agency coordination and outcomes of services. To test this idea, they did a groundbreaking social research study that was initiated in 2005 involving 100 families receiving state assistance. The study proved highly effective in improving the health, income, and quality of life of the participants while returning cost savings back to the taxpayers. And the whole idea is we don't want people using the emergency room for their health care services. Right? We want them to go get wellness checkups. That's one of the incentives that's in the plan. The deductibles, those co-pays are paid out of the health care savings accounts. They're not double paying. So if you are in that income level and you're looking at how are you going to afford health care, that amount of money that you'd be paying in a year is going to be used up in one doctor visit. Just the one health care screening that the state's going to be paying for you out of that health care savings account is going to pay for the total amount of money that you put into it within the first year. Those screenings are based on your age and your gender. One colonoscopy. One cancer found in a colonoscopy is going to save the taxpayers hundreds of thousands of dollars. That's all, Mr. Chairman.
This is the last day of general file, folks. We're on the very first bill. We've got an hour and a half gone, and we've got 20 bills to go. Chairman Landon, in the interest of furthering the debate along, would you move your committee of the whole amendment number one?
Mr. Chairman, I move committee of the whole amendment number one to Senate file 24. Ladies and gentlemen, what this amendment does is it furthers our effort to protect the risk portion of the bill in case there's a number of participants who would have high-cost medical needs. We're requesting that one of the requirements of this insurance package shall be that lifetime benefits for each participant will not exceed $200,000.
Is there any further discussion on committee of the whole amendment number one? All those, question being called, all those in favor of committee of the whole amendment number one, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The amendment's adopted. Representative Hallinan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm moving as fast as I can. On your desk, you should have a copy of Senate File 24, committee of the whole amendment number two, which I hereby move, and I ask your favorable consideration thereof. If you look on that, it will show you how the words on page 20, page 23 will be revised to reflect a little tighter control of how we are going to evaluate the results of this experiment, because that's what it is. The part of it, I'll just read it to you. It's pretty difficult to look at this amendment in the insert-delete form and really understand what it says. So I'll just read it real quickly. In collecting on page 20, lines 16 through 22, It will read, in collecting, evaluating, and using the data collected pursuant to subsection D of this section, this is the section on evaluation, and any other management data, the administrator shall use the services of an outside consultant approved by the governor who shall issue a final evaluation report. The final evaluation shall compare and identify and consider any limitations on statistical significance of data due to small numbers of participants in any category. This bill starts with only 500 people, so you have to have that that last sentence in here. What this change does, it says that the Department of Health will hire an outside consultant, that this person will be approved by the governor, and that he will deliver a final evaluation report. The value of this study is worthless if we do not have a good final evaluation report, preferably by an outside person who has no axe to grind. So that's what this amendment does. It later on says that the final evaluation report, it just has further illumination on what that final evaluation report will, how it will be administered and where it will go. It will go to the Labor, Health, and Social Services Committee, the interim committee, and it will also go to the governor. So instead of just having a report that is put out by the administrator, which is in the original bill, the administrator is conceivably an insurance company that has an axe to grind. Instead, it will be done by an outside consultant, and this person will be approved by the governor. So with that said, I'll answer any questions that anybody has.
Is there any further discussion on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2? Chairman Landon.
Mr. Chairman, that is a friendly amendment. I think that the evaluation is critical, and it's a critical that it be independent, so I would urge the body to adopt the amendment.
All in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The amendment is adopted. We're back on the bill. Chairman Landon.
Mr. Chairman, I just would like to leave the body with these thoughts. This bill is just trying to enable people to rise out of property or out of poverty, gain some living skills, and grow into independence. Before welfare reform, this body passed several actions that gave the state a way to try to get people off of welfare. So we had some experience with that before the federal government passed their Welfare Reform Act. After that was passed, Wyoming was one of the most successful states in making that whole Welfare Reform Act work. This initiative is to try to do the same thing, to get some experience with health care reform, to try some initiatives, and see whether or not incentives work, see whether prevention works. Are we going to make mistakes with this? I can almost guarantee that we'll make mistakes with this, but I don't know how else to learn. So this is an effort to put this proposal before the body for your consideration. Thank you.
Any further discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Landon's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 24 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Pursuant to House Rule 10.5B, the bill having failed a voice vote, a standing division vote is required. All those in favor, please stand. Those opposed, please stand. Having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
No.
Bagby.
No.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Brechtel.
No.
Brown.
No.
Buchanan.
No.
Byrd.
Aye.
Kennedy.
No.
Carson.
Aye.
Childers.
No.
Cohey.
No.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison.
No.
Dirks.
Aye.
Edmonds.
No.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Gilmore.
Aye.
Gingery.
No.
Goggles excused. Hales.
No.
Hallinan.
Aye.
Hammonds.
Aye.
Harshman excused. Harvey.
No.
Harvey. Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Jorgensen.
No.
Landon.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Lubno.
No.
Madden.
No.
McKim.
No.
McComey.
Aye.
Mercer.
No.
Meyer.
Aye.
Miller excused. Millen.
Aye.
Moniz.
No.
Patton.
No.
Peasley.
No.
Pedersen.
No.
Peterson.
No.
Philp.
Aye.
Korberg.
No.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Semlick.
No.
Shepperson.
Aye.
Stewart.
No.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
No.
Thompson.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Wallace.
No.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 28 ayes, 29 noes, 3 excused.
Pursuant to House Rule 10.5B, Senate File 24, having failed a roll call vote, is indefinitely postponed. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File Number 12. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 12, introduced by Senator Burns, an act relating to election campaign contributions. This bill was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, which recommended to do pass with amendments. Ayes, Brown, Kraft, Dirks, Hales, Illaway, Lubno, Miller, Stubson, Zwanitzer, Dan. Signed, Representative Illaway, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with recommendation that Senate File 12 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee amendments. Standing Committee amendments fits on page 2. We delete $2,300. We insert $2,400 because that is where the federal limit is right now. I call for the question on the Standing Committee amendment.
Is there any discussion on the Standing Committee amendment? We're on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. Question having been called, all those in favor of the Standing Committee amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has been adopted.
Mr. Chairman, the good representative from House District 14 will talk about the rest of the bill and the Committee of the Whole amendment.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Chairman, this is a simple bill that goes back to the issue we discussed yesterday to raise campaign contribution levels per election to $2,400. This bill is now inextricably entwined with House Bill 94 that we discussed yesterday. And at this point, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, the purpose of which would be to add Section 2 to this bill so that the $2,400 campaign limitation would be in effect when all the dust clears, whether House Bill 94 passes or does not pass. And I call for the question on the Committee of the Whole Amendment, Mr. Chairman.
We're on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File Number 12. Any further discussion? Question having been called. All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Is there any further discussion on the bill?
No discussion. I call for the question, Mr. Chairman.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Illaway's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File Number 12 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 12 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File Number 74. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 74, introduced by Senator Von Flattern, an act relating to youthful drivers' restricted licenses. This bill was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Carson, Cohey, Gilmore, Hallinan, Madden, Peterson, Zwanitzer, Dave, excused, McKim, signed, Representative Cohey, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Cohey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 74 do pass. For an explanation of the bill, I defer to the capable gentlewoman from Senate Fires, House District 58.
Representative Shepperson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As you can see, this is just inserting four words here. There's been some discrepancy on how the hardship licenses have been applied. Some of the departments of transportation are saying you can have a motorcycle license or a car license. Some of them are saying you can have both. This clears up the confusion. It says you can have both sets of licenses if you pass a test, and there's not very many hardship licenses out there, and the number is declining rapidly, but this is an issue for children in rural areas where there's no bus routes. So I would stand for any questions, and if there are none, I'd call for the question.
Is there any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, and the question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Cohey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 74 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 74 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File Number 98. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 98, introduced by Senator Geis, an act relating to regulation of traffic regarding fines for speeding trucks. This bill was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Carson, Cohey, Gilmore, Hallinan, Madden, McKim, Peterson, Zwanitzer, Dave, signed, representing Cohey, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Cohey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 98 do pass. For an explanation of the bill, I defer to the physician, gentleman from House District 32.
Representative Hallinan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill is very simple. It raises the fine for driving over 6 miles over the speed limit in a truck that weighs 26,000 pounds or more. It raises that fine from $100 to $300. Also, there is a section of the bill. It's that little IV at the bottom, right down the right lower-hand corner of the bill. That applies to superintended zones. Those are the zones that are between, say, the 75-mile zone and the 65-mile zone and areas where there is a particular area of concern. So that presently, those people don't pay a fine at all over the usual fine. And you can look at the handout. I don't know if you still have it from a few days ago. It'll show you how much your fine will be if you're caught going too fast going home. But this won't apply to you unless you're driving a truck that weighs 26,000 pounds or more. So with that said, Mr. Chairman, I'll be ready to answer any questions if anybody has any. If not, I'll call the question.
Is there any discussion on the bill? Representative Shepperson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the bill, the way I understand it with the handout, there's already increased penalties for trucks that do speed. From the data that I've received, over 90% of the speeders are your normal average Joe in the cars. The trucks aren't. And I don't know how many of you have pulled heavy loads. I pull a lot of them, and it's 6 miles an hour over the speed limit or under the speed limit is very difficult to maintain when you're going up and down the big hills and things like that. So on and against the bill, I think that we have increased penalties, and 6 miles an hour over is way too stringent.
Representative Semler, or Chairman Semler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for the information for the body, on the page 2 on line 5, it talks about gross vehicle weight rating, not the weight of the vehicle. The gross vehicle weight rating on a dually pickup pulling a flatbed trailer that's rated at 10,000 pounds, that combination will throw you into this category. So we're not talking about just the big trucks. We're talking about the possibilities of someone just pulling a dually trailer with a dually pickup. You'll qualify under this.
Any further discussion? Representative Hallin.
Mr. Chairman, the 26,000 pounds currently applies. The current fine is $100. It has been in place for approximately 25 years. The YDOT believes that having this higher penalty has a better chance of stopping this kind of driving. So that's why this bill has been put forward. And by the way, it's put forward by a trucker.
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have one question. I mean, the good lady was from Midwest was talking about those trucks that the she hauls, and I just want to know about if you get it up to speed or you get it up there to 80 miles an hour, It seems to me that maybe there ought to be a mileage limit length, like a half a mile, that the guy says, "Oh, I got up too high. I want to let it go down." So I think this is a poor piece of legislation. I think it's flawed.
Is there any further discussion? Representative Hallinan.
Well, I guess that's a policy question this body has a right to make. YDOT thinks that this will reduce the over miles driving by these heavy trucks. They did indicate in some questioning to our committee that they realize that sometimes a truck's going to be going over that 6 miles going downhill, and they say they use their discretion in those cases. Maybe they should follow our representative from Natrona County real closely.
Chairman Cohey.
Which representative from Natrona County? Members of the House, just think about a few things as a deterrent. If you are some of the people that I've heard complaining about people going across I-80 with 80,000 pounds, 40 tons of mass, traveling at 80 miles an hour or more, then this is for you. The $100 deterrent, which is hardly a deterrent anymore, when you have an individual making his or her living traveling up and down the highway anymore, $100 isn't much of a disincentive to go just a little bit faster, but $300 may be. So just think about those things as you vote on this bill.
Is there any further discussion on Senate file number 98? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Cohey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate file 98 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate file number 98 has passed Committee of the Whole. Division having been called, all those in favor of Senate file number 98, please stand. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd hold still while they're counting, that would sure make our afternoon go a lot faster. Told you so. Senate file number 98 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate file number 66. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate file 66, introduced by Senator Esquibel, an act relating to Medicaid foot care. This bill was referred to committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Esquibel, Goggles, Harvey, Landon, Shepperson, no, Hallinan, Millen, excused, Davison, signed, Representative Landon, Chairman. The bill was further referred to committee number 2, Appropriations, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Harshman, Pedersen, Philp, Stewart, excused, Jorgensen, signed, Representative Berger, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman Landon?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee of the whole rise and report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate file 66 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, and I will explain the bill at this time. Mr. Chairman, before I explain the bill, I'd like just a moment of privilege of the floor to just to note how the good co-chairman of the Labor Committee, whenever we were discussing Senate File 24, would preface what she said about the bill with "I believe," and that issue came up this morning, brought to our attention by the good representative from Cody. And I wanted to apologize on that discussion of the wildlife issue and prairie dogs if I did not preface some of my comments with "I believe." I think we all come here with our beliefs, and that's what this is makes such a healthy discussion about. We compare them and hold them up to one another, and if I did not preface that, I apologize for it, because we've always had a vigorous debate on that. Back to the bill now, Mr. Chairman. What this bill proposes, as you can see on the bottom of page 1, is in the authorization for services. This is concerns our Medicaid program. And this will authorize for services and supplies, medically necessary foot care services, and that are provided by health care professionals licensed pursuant to Title 33. What exactly that means is medically necessary is a I guess the lawyers would say a term of art, and that is things that there are specific codes for. So this will allow podiatrists to deliver services for foot care, and I wanted to also to specify that more clearly of what we mean by that. So I have done that in a committee of the whole amendment number one, which I would move at this time with the chair's permission. Mr. Chairman,
I'm in committee of the whole amendment number one.
I do move committee of the whole amendment number one, and you can see that on the bottom of page one, or on page two, on line two, after licenses, it describes these services, and the services under this paragraph are going to include services described under the Federal Lower Extremities Amputation Prevention Program. That's also known as a layout program, and any successors. And this is mainly to treat diabetics and others. There's Hansen disease and some other vascular diseases that are affecting feet. And what we find with the with people that have these conditions is they lose sensation in their feet, they get sores, they get infections, and then they have to require amputations. And the cost of one amputation is just out of sight. So that's the main focus of this bill, is to prevent amputations and to make sure people who have diabetes can take care of their feet.
We're on committee of the whole amendment number one. Is there any discussion on committee of the whole amendment number one?
Question.
All those in favor of committee of the whole amendment number one, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. We're back on the bill. Is there any discussion on the bill? Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the bill, several years ago we had a doctor in this body, and his comment when we kept adding stuff to Medicaid was, you will rue the day. Notice on page two, there is appropriated $100,000 from the general fund to the Department of Health. It says in federal funds. Guess what? We're going to continue with this. I'm very sorry for these people that do have feet problems. I was married to a diabetic at one time. It is a terrible thing, but we can't keep going on and on and on and putting more things into Medicaid. On and against the bill.
Representative Hallinan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. People that have diabetic problems with their feet, they really should not be taken care of solely by a podiatrist. And that's what this bill does. This bill authorizes direct access to a podiatrist. You need to have the problems that happen with feet, with diabetes, with polyneuropathy, with distal neuropathy. Those are late signs of whatever the disease that you have is. You need to be seeing a doctor for that, someone who can take care of the primary condition that you have. A doctor's referral can send you to a podiatrist now, and I have done so. I have had people that have had diabetes and have had a foot ulcer. I've sent them to a podiatrist, and that is the way it should be. They should not be going to a podiatrist first and having direct access for that. The main problem is the amount of dollars that are indicated in this program in addition to what I just said. There is $200,000 in this program. The initial bill that when it was introduced said that the cost of this provision of these services would be $650,000 a year. This is a $200,000 appropriation for 1 year. And yet this program goes on. The program does not stop when this money is spent. The program continues. This question was asked of the people when it was presented. So on and against this bill, and I hope you vote it down. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Millen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I agree with the good doc from Gillette. I too, when this bill was first sent to me, this was $1.3 million for 2 years.
this is a huge growth of government, and I think what we have already in place is working just fine, and I am against the bill.
Chairman Landon.
Thank you for an opportunity to respond. This bill was brought to me by a doctor from Sheridan, and whenever I saw that the it was actually started by a senator over on the other side, I said, well, I will sign on to this because this individual I thought had a good argument, and that was, you can pay for this now or you can pay for it later. And I said, what do you mean you can pay for it later? And he said, well, you can either have this service being delivered by podiatrists where they test people's sensitivity on their feet and they give them strategies on how to take care of their feet so that they don't go into this amputation mode, or you can pay for it when they get an amputation. This appropriation that you see on here is a recognition that this would cover about 700 people that would be able to see podiatrists for this type of care. That appropriation doesn't cover the amount that Medicaid is going to pay out for one amputation. And so I think that you have to look at the cost, but you certainly have to look at the benefit as well. And I just think the savings far outweigh the cost. And the type of program that this advocates with this testing your feet for sensitivity through this LEAP program, it is proven to reduce amputation. So on and for the bill.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Landon's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 66 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Having failed, a voice vote, standing division vote is required. All those in favor, please stand. Those opposed? More than 11. Having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
No.
Bagby.
No.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger. Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Bonner.
No.
Brechtel.
No.
Brown.
No.
Buchanan.
No.
Byrd.
No.
Kennedy.
No.
Carson.
Aye.
Childers.
No.
Cohey.
No.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
No.
Davison.
No.
Dirks.
Aye.
Edmonds.
No.
Esquivel. Esquivel. Gilmore.
Aye.
Gingery.
No.
Gingery.
No.
Goggles excused. Hales. Hallinan.
No.
Hammonds. Harshman excused. Harvey. Illaway.
No.
Yagi.
No.
Jorgensen.
No.
Landon.
Aye.
Lockhart.
No.
Lubno.
No.
Madden.
No.
McKim.
No.
McComey. McComey. Mercer.
No.
Meyer. Meyer. Millen. Miller excused. Millen.
No.
Moniz.
No.
Patton.
No.
Peasley.
No.
Pedersen.
No.
Peterson.
No.
Philp.
No.
Korberg.
No.
Roscoe.
No.
Semlick.
No.
Shepperson.
No.
Stewart.
No.
Stubson.
No.
Teeters.
No.
Thompson.
No.
Throne.
No.
Wallace. Swanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Excused.
Esquivel excused. McComey.
Excused.
McComey excused. I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 12 ayes, 43 noes, 5 excused.
Pursuant to House Rule 10.5B, Senate File 66, having failed, a roll call vote is indefinitely postponed. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File Number 145. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 145, introduced by Senator Nicholas, an act relating to Memorial Hospitals regarding hospital and health care district services to providers. This bill was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Brown, Kraft, Hales, Illaway, Miller, Zwanitzer, Dan, excused, Dirks, Stubson, conflict, Lubno, signed, Representative Illaway, Chairman.
Madam Majority Whip, could you come up here? Chairman Illaway, or you've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with recommendation that Senate File 145 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, and the good representative from House District 14 will explain the bill.
Representative Brown.
Madam Majority Whip, we have authorized under the statutes county memorial hospitals, special hospital districts, rural health care districts, and the like to provide health care services outside of their own entity. Sometimes this is done directly, and sometimes this is done through a subsidiary organization. This bill would expand that authority slightly and say that provided the entity that's organized and is providing health care services is organized and operated to sell services to health care providers, which might be other hospitals within the state, they may also sell such services to non-health care providers. And remember, they have to be primarily organized for this purpose. It would be of great assistance to them and allow them to provide these services to other non-healthcare providers. They're probably in the healthcare field, but they wouldn't qualify under the statutes as a healthcare provider. It's presently being done. This would clear up an ambiguity in the law, and I would urge your favorable vote on this bill.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Yeah. Just what kind of services are we talking about on this bill?
Representative Brown.
Madam Majority Whip, IT services are the ones that have that are driving this, and those IT services are health care records, financial records, billing, and that sort of thing.
Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Illaway's motion?
Oh. Madam Majority Whip, I'm sorry. I was occupied. Oh, I need to declare a conflict on this bill as well.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Lubno. Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Illaway's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 145 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Senate File 145 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 112. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 112, introduced by Senator Scott, an act relating to trade and commerce regarding archaic price regulation repeal. This bill was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, which recommended that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Brown, Hales, Lubno, Miller, Stubson, no, Kraft, Dirks, Illaway, Zwanitzer, Dan, signed, Representative Brown, Vice Chair.
You have heard the reading of the Senate file. What is your pleasure, Chairman Illaway?
Thank you, Madam Majority Whip. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 112 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee amendments. I'm going to ask something a little bit different on this Standing Committee amendment. There are several committee amendments. There's one standing committee amendment, and there are many or four Committee of the Whole amendments. I'm going to ask you to vote no on the standing committee amendment, since that standing committee amendment is incorporated in the last Committee of the Whole report. So I'm going to call for the question on the standing committee amendment and ask you to vote no.
Is there any discussion on the standing committee amendment? You have heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Question having been called, all those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 112, please say aye.
No.
All those opposed, say no.
No.
Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File Number 112 has failed. We are back on the bill. Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Madam Majority Whip. And I would like to ask the good representative from House District 56 to explain the bill and go on with the amendments.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you promise to vote aye, I will be very quick about this. Maybe I'll be quick anyway. You've all received, I'm sure, quite a bit of literature and some arm-twisting on this bill. It really goes back to the sponsor on the other side of the hall had run into an issue on low-cost marketing of prescription drugs. And some of the box stores had been advertising nationally $4 prescription drugs, and yet you weren't able to find those in Wyoming. And when asked why that was, those box stores pointed to the provisions that we're talking about in this bill, the archaic pricing law. There was a bill brought last year to address that, and it ran into a significant opposition from petroleum marketers around the state who had been using this law as a tool against low-cost petroleum marketers in trying to prevent below-cost marketing of petroleum products. And so what you see before you today was the work of the product of work over the interim to try to accommodate those concerns. And what you will see in the later amendment from the good gentleman from Campbell County is a sort of redirection of the bill that brings it closer to the middle, where both of the sides that you've been hearing from over the last few days can live with the bill, and where it moves significantly toward accomplishing its ends. Just really quickly, what the bill does is it guts out a lot of the old anti-trade language dating back to the 1930s. Specifically, there's an abundance of law in this section that is there but is essentially ignored by everyone. For example, there's a prohibition on marketing in one part of the state at one price and then in another part of the state at another price. And that applies no matter what. For example, if I've got snowboards, I've got to sell them at the same price up near Big Ski area in the northwestern part of the state as I do maybe in the wheat fields of the eastern part of the state. It doesn't reflect demand. It's divorced from reality. So this sort of takes all that out and eliminates all that archaic language. What it also does, sort of the other side of the coin, is it takes the below-cost marketing provisions that are already in statute that were really very, very vague, so vague as to be unenforceable, and it gives some specificity to them. It allows them to be enforced. It allows and prevents people from marketing below cost. And that's, if there's one thing you take away from the discussion about this bill, I would disagree with what some folks have been saying about this bill to date. This is not an anti-big box bill. This is not a bill to say you big box stores shouldn't be pricing so low. What this is an anti-predatory pricing bill. We want good competition. We want consumers to have the best prices that are out there. What we don't want is predatory pricing, which in the end and over the long run drives up prices and is bad for consumers. And that's with the amendment you're going to see before you, that's where we get to with this bill. To walk through some of the specific changes really just very quickly, the below cost marketing provisions in the bill as in the law as it currently stands includes the invoice cost plus the cost of doing business. And that's where the problem comes in, because this cost of doing business can turn into a huge game, and you can really get around the prohibitions under the statute. So we make it very specific and say the cost is the invoice cost plus freight and taxes. It sets a very definite standard on what the cost is, and then it says you can't sell below cost. And there are a number of exceptions, those exceptions that you would expect to find in existing law that we haven't touched are exceptions for closeout sales, for damaged goods, and those sorts of things. On pages 6 and 7 of the bill, you see a list of additional exceptions that we've included to make sure that standard marketing practices that are incorporated today can continue. And that includes that you can sell them for below cost for promotional purposes for limited time periods, and we'll deal with that with the upcoming amendment. For inventory reduction sales and for other specified types of sales. And so we go in, and with the amendment, we'll be expanding this, but we include a provision that you can sell below that invoice cost where you typically would want to do that. What you can't do is for extended periods of time shoot below the invoice costs and that's a per se predatory pricing. And so that is a very quick sketch of the bill. I think maybe we want to talk about the amendments, and that'll get us into some of the hot button issues and allow us to move forward on the bill.
Representative Dan Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I'd like to withdraw Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1.
Thank you, Representative Zwanitzer. Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Madam Majority Whip. I'd like to withdraw Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2.
Ditto, Chairman Illaway. Representative Stubson.
Madam Majority Whip, I would like to withdraw Committee of the Whole Amendment number 3.
We're on a roll. Thank you, Representative Stubson. That leaves us to Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Madam Majority Whip. I would not like to withdraw Committee of the Whole Amendment number 4, and as a matter of fact, I would move it. What this bill does, or what this amendment does, is remove all of the warts off of the bill that you've been seeing in all of the correspondence coming into your box. You have to remember that this is already a statute on our books. It was passed in 1911 during the trust-busting days. What this amendment does is bring this statute into the new century, and I've been informed by the folks out in Ambush Alley that they all agree with these amendments, and with these amendments would agree with the bill. What the amendment does is, if you look at page 2 of the bill, the language that says impose any charge on a customer for using a competing or different supplier, that comes out. On page 3, we add the language. There's a whole series of exceptions to this act. And what this does is this adds another exception that says prohibit any person, firm, corporation, or other entity from offering a customer loyalty program. So what that does is that now permits customer loyalty programs, which was one of the objections that we heard about. On page 4, we take out subsection A, which was prohibiting gifts and requiring a whole series of accounting. On page 5, there was the old statute as it exists required proof of intent. What this did is this amended the proposal in the bill amended it so that if you just had this conduct, you violated the statute, and that was proof of intent. We've taken that out, so now to maintain one of these actions, you have to prove intent. On page 6, halfway down, we remove the language on line 13, 14, and 15 that says, provided the sum of all special sales or a singular similar product shall not exceed 30 days per year, so that they don't have to account day by day by day what's on sale, and it doesn't limit the sales. In the next paragraph, we remove the language, items no longer in fashion, mostly because nobody knew what that meant. So what the amendment does is it addresses the customer loyalty issue. It addresses the sales time limits issue. It addresses the accounting issues. It clarifies some definitions, mostly with this bill now, the definition of what violates is clarified. And then in the existing act, there are treble damages. The last page of the bill removes the treble damages plus attorney's fees and brings it back to actual damages sustained together with reasonable attorney's fees and costs. With that, I'd stand for any questions on the amendment.
We are on Committee of the Whole Amendment number 4, Representative Gilmore.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I have a couple of questions. When I started my small business, we chose a motto. It was buy high, sell low. And I've been gone for 3 months almost, and as far as I know, my partners are still doing that. And the question is it's my stuff. I should be able to sell it for anything I want to sell it for. If I can continue to stay in business and sell stuff for less than what it cost us, I don't think I need the state interfering. And I have a couple of these amendments might cure that, but I'm not certain that they will. And I'm on and against the bill.
Further discussion on Committee of the Whole Amendment number 4. Are you ready for the question? Oh.
Madam Majority Whip.
Representative Lubnow.
With respect to the questions of the good representative from Casper, this statute that's already on the books, what you have to prove to do this is you have to prove that you're intending to collude or damage competition. It's that 44-109. And we've left that now with this amendment the way it is. You already have a statute on the books. And so it's only when you do this with the intent of restraining trade that you have a problem. And so if you want to buy high and sell low and you can still stay in business and do it, let me know when you're selling. But you're not violating that statute until you intend and somebody can prove that you intend to restrain trade.
We are voting on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 4 to Senate File 112. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 4 has passed. We are back on the bill. Further discussion, Representative Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I commend the bringer of the amendment that was just passed. It makes it better. But it still looks to me like it's a lot of debate as far as how you interpret this, how you improve, how do you prove intent. You know, it kind of just as an example, I'd like to have somebody explain to me in, you know, non-legalese terms, or any kind of terms, actually, starting with the bottom of page 6, line 22, where it says, of any products in a class of products, where the prices are identical for the same volume throughout the class, provided total revenue from all the sales of products of that class by the vendor exceed the costs as defined in 40-4-107. And then it gets even more confusing on the next sentence. It says, for pharmaceuticals, for the purposes of this subsection, prices are identical if they are identical for a supply for a defined period of time, even though the physical quantities may be different. I mean, you know, when I first saw this bill, I kind of wished that we still had Thurman Arnold in this body. You know, Thurman served in this very house in 1921 and 1922, and he became famous nationally for being the trust buster of the, what should we say, the post-Depression era. And I just kind of wonder if Thurman was here with us today, if he'd like this bill. I don't think he would. And I just, you know, I could be convinced to vote for it, but I just don't know if it still makes sense to, it may make sense to lawyers. It may be a jobs program for lawyers, for all I know. In fact, I don't know who's supposed to enforce this. Is this the Attorney General's job to enforce this, or is it some other state bureau? Or I guess we haven't talked about that yet, and I'd like to get some answers if I could. Thank you.
Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm here as a consumer. I love loss leaders. I can work my way right into a store and buy that loss leader and not be enticed by all those other things they want me to buy, and that's why they offered the loss leader. So my question for you, with the bill as amended, will business people in Wyoming still be able to sell products at below cost, those loss leaders that are ways of enticing me into their stores? Will that still be legal if we pass this bill as amended?
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me, I guess, answer the last question first. In most circumstances, yes. Not in all circumstances. In those circumstances where it's an instrument of predatory pricing, it's aimed at putting other people out of business, not merely retaining your own business, and it doesn't fit in those numerous exceptions that are contained on pages 5, 6, and within the bill under the customer loyalty program, then it would be, which is almost to say never would it be not allowed under this bill. I mean, essentially, you would. I can't think of a circumstance where you'd have a loss leader and not have it permitted under the bill. That's probably as simple as I can say it for that one. On with respect to the questions from the good representative from Johnson County, starting with the question of enforcement, the bill as it stands now, there's actually three modes of enforcement. One, the Attorney General. Two, county attorneys. and three, a private cause of action that it allows actual damages and attorney's fees if you decide to pursue it. With respect to the language on page 6 and 7, that was from our own Thurman Arnold, who resides down the hall and is from my home county, and that was language aimed specifically at the pharmaceuticals issue, language aimed to reflect a class, specifically pharmaceuticals, and to say you could have those low prices in the instances of pharmaceuticals. I won't pretend that I know all the details of where that language came, but that's what the language is intended to do and why it was developed. With respect to the question of intent, remember, that's not a new part of this bill. That's the thing that's been there since 1911. And that's the thing that we've spent about 100 years developing in the bodies of trust law. So I could give you a lot of legalese, but let me just say that it's the intent when it comes to anti-trade action and predatory pricing is an issue that's been out there, has been litigated and decided for 100 years. And among those members of the bar who are a lot smarter than I and who actually practice in the area of antitrust, it's an area that's well known and sort of well settled. The aim of this bill is to make this law a law that actually works, a law that is enforceable, but a law that maximizes competition and ensures the best deal for consumers. That's it. And again, I think thank the good gentleman from Campbell County for all his hard work, because what he did is he took it from a bill where the question was whose ox is being gored to a bill that ran the middle of the road that ensures that the party being served is the consumer. So I would ask for your favorable vote. If you still have questions about the bill, I'd be more than ready to entertain them after hours or in the other readings of the bill.
Is there any further discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Illaway's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 112 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File number 112 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File number 90. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 90, introduced by Senator Ross, an act relating to unemployment insurance benefits spouse of deployed military. This bill was referred to Committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Carson, Cohey, Madden, McKim, Peterson, Zwanitzer, Dave, No, Gilmore, Hallinan. Signed, representing Cohey, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Cohey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 90 do pass. This bill is out of concern for the spouses of Wyoming military personnel. When that personnel is transferred to another location for one reason or another because of deployment or training, when the transfer takes place, the spouse really has a choice, stay at home or move with the spouse. Should the spouse be employed and take the option of moving, another difficult choice is to leave behind probably a very good job. Should they be unable to find employment at the new location, this bill allows that spouse to file for and receive unemployment benefits. To qualify, the commute to the previous location would have to be considered unreasonable and just untenable, and the person would have had to have been employed for at least 8 weeks' worth of effort at that particular job. Mr. Chairman, that briefly explains the bill, and I stand for questions.
Is there any discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Cohey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File number 90 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File number 90 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File number 89. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 89, introduced by Senator Landon, an act relating to higher education regarding fallen hero endowments. This bill was referred to Committee number 4, Education, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Connolly, Kraft, Dirks, Yagi, Lubno, McKim, McComey, Teeters, absent, Brechtel, signed, Representative McComey, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Vice Chairman Teeters?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 89 do pass. And I will pass the brief explanation over to my good friend from the western part of the state.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For a brief explanation, you do have in your box the names of 41 fallen heroes and the colleges and the university that they represent. What this bill does, it strictly, I have a lot to say, but I'm trying to keep it under 45 seconds. So what it's going to do, if you look at page 2, gifts given to these community colleges or University of Wyoming were in the $50,000 range. This bill makes it so community colleges and University of Wyoming can receive contributions of any value, and they will be using this fund. They will be matched, as you can see in letter A on page 3, $2,000 for $1,000, and the next one, $1,000, $3,000. All it is a way for the community colleges and University of Wyoming to be able to collect money, put it into this fund, and I will say the Fallen Heroes Fund does not go just to their children. It's open to anybody, any kids in the state of Wyoming that want to go to one of the 7 community colleges or University of Wyoming. That's about as brief as I can make it. Thank you.
Vice Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I forgot there is a standing committee amendment. So at this time, I would like to move standing committee amendment number 1 to Senate File 89. Essentially, all it does is change the enacting date from July 1st to immediately, and I would ask for your favorable consideration.
Is there any discussion on the standing committee amendment? You've heard the motion on the standing committee amendment number 1. Are you all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing committee amendment number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Is there any discussion? Question being called. Those in favor of Vice Chairman Teeter's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File number 89 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 89 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File number 134. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 134, introduced by Senator DiCaria, an act relating to motor vehicles regarding embossed license plates. This bill was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Blake, Carson, Cohey, Gilmore, Hallinan, McKim, Peterson, Swanitzer, Dave. No, Madden, signed, Representative Cohey, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Cohey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 134 do pass. Members of the House, as most of you know, this year the state of Wyoming is changing its license plate style from what we have currently known to where we have pressed or raised or embossed letters on the plate to something that's extremely flat. It's been determined over the years that that's because the place that they used to be made, somewhat 100 miles west of here, where Wyoming's finest used to work at the plant making those plates, that the machinery is worn out and difficult to replace. They found a much easier and cheaper way to do that. But for those of you that admire the looks of the raised letters and numbers and the proud state logo on your license plate, you will like this bill. For a modest fee, pardon me, Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment, and I need to move standing committee amendment number 1 to Senate File 134 at this time. What the standing committee amendment does, the bill originally asked for an additional $40 for one of these license plates with embossed figures on it, and the committee's wisdom raised it to $50 because the information we received was about 2 years old, so we allowed for a little bit of inflation and for some handling fees by the state and by the county. So I would so move and ask for your favorable adoption of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 134.
We're on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. Is there any discussion? Question having been called, all those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now that we have adopted the amendment, for a modest fee of $50, that should be more than enough to cover the expense of production, handling, and processing and getting your plates to your door. You could proudly display on your vehicle what many people believe to be a superior state symbol for the price of a good tire. The committee heard testimony from the county treasurer, very local to this area, saying that that person is aware of at least 1,000 people that would be interested in one of these plates. The process would be to make application through your county by way of rules and forms to be devised by YDOT, and they indicate that that wouldn't be much of a problem. The registration fees would be paid plus the $50, and within about 90 days, your plates would arrive. Mr. Chairman, that briefly explains the bill, and I'll stand for any questions.
Is there any discussion? Chairman Gingrey.
Mr. Chairman, just a real quick question. I can recall when I had a lot of constituents calling me a few years ago upset that we didn't have this type of play anymore. And when I called YDOT to ask why, and they gave the whole explanation of the prison shutting down the machine, the other reason they gave was that the Highway Patrol had, and Highway Patrols across the nation were advocating for the new ones, the flat ones, because they're easier for the Highway Patrol to actually see it in some manner. I'm just curious if that came up in committee, because that was one of the two reasons that was given to me as to why we weren't doing it anymore. It doesn't seem that important, but anyway.
Chairman Cohey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and that even may be a valid point, but at the committee hearing that night, the local Highway Patrol was present at the meeting, and really nothing got mentioned. And the question did not get asked, but there certainly wasn't anything mentioned on behalf of YDOT as to a national trend with visibility of flattened plates.
Is there any further discussion on the bill? Question being called. Those in favor of Chairman Cohey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 134 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Division. Division being called. All those in favor, please stand. Senate File 134 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File Number 114. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 114, introduced by Senator Martin, an act relating to animal control. This bill was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Blake, Carson, Edmonds, Gilmore, Moniz, Semlek, Teeters, Wallace, Wanitzer, Dan. Signed, Representative Semlek, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Chairman Semlek.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File Number 114 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, and I'll briefly explain the amendment. The first thing it does on page 1 is take out that Section C. Move on down on line 10. It deletes or that bites any person, and it's a little bit hard to roll these amendments in without explaining the bill, but I've chose to do that. It further down on line 12, on the impoundment section of the bill, it reduces the new language from 15 days down to 10 days for quarantine. Next line down 13, the line now will read as long as necessary for the referring back to the quarantine as determined by the Wyoming State Health Officer, so there's some qualifying language in there. Line 18 changes dogs to animals, does that again on line 19. Page 3, it talks about changes the fees from $5 to $10. And on Section M on 3, the Standing Committee Amendment inserts this language. It has to do with the guard dogs. Except as provided in subsection E of this section regarding impoundment of animals to determine disease status. And for further quick explanation of the bill, I turn that over to the good representative from the land of Sweetwater in Green River, House District 39.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Briefly, what this legislation does is changes the word dog to any animal throughout the legislation. So that would include cat bites, because they can spread rabies, too. I say this bill is mostly about rabies. It also changes that the animal may be quarantined in your own home for the 10 days that we changed it to if you prove that your dog or cat has a rabies vaccination. And it puts in that you send a copy of an animal attack report must be submitted to the state health officer. That's new language. It also allows an exception for the owner of an animal who is guarding livestock. would not be charged under this unless the owner is willingly negligent, and I'd stand for any questions.
Is there any discussion on the standing committee? Chairman Sumlock.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I forgot to call for the question. If there's no questions on the standing committee amendment, Mr. Chairman, I'd call for the question on the standing committee amendment.
Any discussion on the standing committee amendment? We're on standing committee amendment number 1 to Senate file number 114. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing committee amendment number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill. So any discussion on the bill? Question being called, those in favor of Chairman Semlek's motion that when the committee of the whole rise to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate file number 114 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate file 114 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate file number 35. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate file 35, introduced by Senator Sessions, an act relating to the age of majority and health care, youth access to tobacco cessation programs. This bill was referred to committee number 4, Education, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Brechtel, Connolly, Kraft, Dirks, Yagi, Lubno, McKim, McComey, Teeters. Signed, representing McComey, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Mr. Co-Chairman Teeters?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, or Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 35 do pass. And there are no standing committee amendments. And
turn it over to Lord.
The good representative from District 6 will explain the bill.
Eight. Representative Millen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, bring before you here, what this bill does is basically just say that we're going to put in the statute that we're going to allow those under 18 to get the tobacco cessation information. This is just information, no medication, and they will have access to the quit line, which is already being provided for through the tobacco settlement funds. There's no money on this. This is just to get, you know, Wyoming has the highest number of kids under the age of 18 who are using spit tobacco, and this is just to get them counseling and free information. So I stand for any questions that you have on this bill. Otherwise, I'd call for the question.
Is there any discussion on the bill? Question having been called, all those in favor of Co-Chairman Teeter's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 35 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 35 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 93. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 93, introduced by Senator Landon, an act relating to health and safety regarding oral health initiative. This bill was referred to committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Escobel, Goggles, Hallinan, Harvey, Landon, Millen, no, Shepperson, excused, Davison, signed, Representative Landon, Chairman. The bill was further referred to committee number 2, Appropriations, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Harshman, Pedersen, Phelps, Stewart, excused, Jorgensen, signed, Representative Berger, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Landon.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee of the whole rise and report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 93 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments from the Labor Committee, and I will let the good chairman of the appropriation move that standing committee amendment at the appropriate time. And until then, I turn over the explanation of the bill to the good representative from Cheyenne.
Representative Millen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill did not have a co-sponsor on it, and when I heard it in our House Labor Committee, I realized, you know, this is something very important to bring forward, but it was my suggestion that the sponsor please go to Appropriations to ask this money, which the committee of the whole, or what the standing committee amendment will do, is bring the money out of the tobacco settlement funds. And that's one of the reasons, since that was brought forward, I'm hoping that passes, because that's one of the reasons I'm supporting this bill.
Okay, so I gave out a handout that has listed on it my name. It has the study of focus of what this bill is doing and what we're asking to do with the $50,000. So if you could look at that. There's not been a statewide oral health data information stuff gathered for 20 years in this state, and the dentists in this state are just asking that, you know, this is something that once they go around the state and collect this data, they'll be able to tell the Wyoming Oral Health Care policymakers and professionals will have the information available to find out, you know, what are your at-risk populations and who are vulnerable and who will need some of these, you know, whether they're going to study our youth, our seniors, our the dental diseases, fluoridation, and morbidity. And I guess I would just stand for any questions because I put out the sheet that lists everything that this bill is going to do, and this $50,000 is just to do this study, authorize the Department of Health to do that, and collect the analysis. So $50,000, and I'm hoping that we pass the amendment to come out of the tobacco settlement funds for that.
Is there any discussion on the bill? Chairman Berger.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 93. And what we did, the Appropriations Committee did think this was a good idea, and we suggested changing it from the general fund to the tobacco settlement fund, and there was about $1.59 million left in that account. And I would call for the question if there are no questions on the amendment.
We're on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. Is there any discussion? Representative Shepperson? Any discussion on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1? You've heard the motion on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Is there any discussion on the bill? Now, Representative Shepperson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the good sponsors bringing this bill, and I think it's a good idea, too. But is it a good idea for our Department of Health to be involved? Why can't, we heard testimony in committee about the Dental Association, why can't they do this on their own? They mentioned several times, well, this is too big for them, it's too big. And I said, well, what have you done to try to handle this on your own? And the only thing they could say is, well, we've assessed a $100 fee to each dentist to try and get some money and some support for this. Well, I'm sorry, I just don't think that's enough ownership, so where we just roll over, let the state pay for this. So I think the dentists, if they want to have this done, they can do it, but I don't think our Department of Health should have to foot the cost for this. I know it's not a lot of money, but $50,000 is $50,000, and whether it comes out of the general fund or the tobacco settlement fund, it's still money. Thank you. On and against.
Representative Pedersen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise in support of this bill, and the reason I do is because of a number of things. One is I do believe that where we're going to have the study this bill is probably the best place to study. You can get statewide information. I don't think the Dental Association has the ability to do this type of statewide piece. And the most important thing that I think that this is about is you can do a lot of advertising. You can tell people to floss and brush, but the thing that this is going to address is the youth and the seniors, and figure out where in the state do we have the problems and where in the state do we need to work on certain issues. You can't solve a problem if you don't know where it is. One of the things that's fascinating is, I got news for everybody on the floor, and this is going to be a big one, you don't need your dentist. That's right, you don't. 90% of all the things you're going to go in to see your dentist for is you can prevent, just a little flossing, a little brushing. And this type of figuring out where we have the problems, where we have the shortages, where we're getting, you know, shortages in fluoride, where are we not getting our education done, this will save us money in the long run. You're paying up front a small amount instead of a large amount in the end. I like this. I think we're going to end up with a lot of positive results.
Representative Millen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, you know, the purpose of this bill is to check for oral diseases, oral cancers. They've become an increasing problem, serious here in Wyoming. You know, scientific evidence links oral cancers and with patients who suffer from diabetes, cardiovascular disease, stroke, other chronic ailments.
You know, this is a targeted outreach, and enhanced education is critical in prevention, detection, and treatment of these oral diseases. You know, it's in this study, they're going to be checking to make sure everyone is, like the good representative from Laramie County said, we're checking to make sure you have good oral hygiene, detecting, you know, this, and the state working on this, this is important. They already had a similar effort led through the Meth Mouth initiative, and that worked out great. And so I think this should be a top priority for improving our dental health in Wyoming.
Representative Bagby.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Standing in support of this bill, I wish they would have had this bill 25 years ago. Then my mother-in-law wouldn't have to use a glass of Everdent every night.
Question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Landon's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 93 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The Senate File Number 35 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Or 93, I'm sorry, 93 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Speaker.
May I have privilege of the floor, Mr. Chairman?
Certainly, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. I'd like to introduce three students from Cody High School who are here this afternoon. They're good friends of the Page John Root, Blake Frazier, Katie Hall, and Jake Howard, right up here in the West Gallery.
Welcome to the People's House. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to next consider Senate Files 106, 108, and 39.
The next bill for our consideration is Senate File Number 106. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 106, introduced by Senator Hastert, an act relating to public health and safety medication disposal program. This bill was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Bonner, Davison, Escobel, Goggles, Hallinan, Harvey, Landon, Millen, Shepperson. Signed, Representative Landon, Chairman. It was further referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Ammons, Harshman, Jorgensen, Pedersen, Philp. No, Stewart. Signed, Representative Berger, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman Landon?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 106 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments. There is a Committee of the Whole amendment, but I will pass that and the bill over to the good representative from Basin Country.
Mr. Chairman, I do have a standing committee amendment.
Sorry about that.
Is it 106?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There is a standing committee amendment number one in which I will move at this time. What this standing committee amendment did was to clarify the language that you see on page four where it says, in absence of bad faith, any person who participates in donating, accepting, distributing, and so on of drugs. This is a real important part of this bill because right now it just reads that any person who exercises reasonable care in donating and so on is immune. So this expands that, and what the amendment does is this expands it for companies that are actually drug manufacturing companies because they don't have... if somebody did do this in bad faith, is they don't have any control over drugs being tampered with. And we had a bill concerning that a couple years ago. There's some key words for that, and I can't remember what they are. But anyway, that had to do with keeping drugs. We passed legislation that kept drugs to where they couldn't be tampered with, And so this is just reinforces that.
We're on Standing Committee Amendment number one. Is there any discussion? You've heard the motion on Standing Committee Amendment. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment number one has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Representative Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Really quickly, in 2005, we passed a bill called Surplus Medication, and since that time, hundreds of thousands of eligible medications have been donated to the Cheyenne site to turn around and prescribe these drugs to people who couldn't afford their prescriptions. And it has been wildly successful. For every dollar spent on the pharmacist's salary, we get $4.86 worth of free medication dispensed. What happens is inpatient facilities, when a patient's medication gets changed or they leave the facility, the medication that was in their drawer before would be disposed of. Now it's mailed to Cheyenne and redistributed through our pre-health clinics and also through physicians who are aware of this program, and they can prescribe the medication. They can call down, see if that medication is available, and turn around and help their low-income clients be able to get some medications. This bill has other things that it does as well, and the first one is to encourage people to clean out their medicine cabinets and dispose of drugs in an environmentally safe manner. And so what this does is enable some drug collection days in connection with the Drug Enforcement Agency, and they're called take-back events. So if you've got narcotics in your medicine cabinet that may make you at risk of burglary or people borrowing your medication, you now have a way to dispose of them that does not contaminate our water system by flushing them down the toilet. The other thing, the disposal programs on page 2, on page 3, it changes the wording on the redispensing. Right now, as the medication come in, they had to be redispensed within 2 months. Now, if this bill passes, it would allow them 2 months before the expiration date of the drug. So it could have had a 2-year expiration date, but because of the law, it had to be disposed of early. And now we've just kind of fixed that. This also requires the department to provide public education to consumers. The bill as it stands right now adds some support services, some full-time and part-time employees, but as you can see, the amendment, Committee of the Whole Amendment 1, deletes those positions and also the appropriation. We were going to have 4 sites, additional sites around the state, but I believe that there are enough good things in this bill that even if we don't add the appropriation or the positions, it still does a lot of good just by lengthening the time that they can hold on the prescriptions and also the being able to dispose of medications. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment 1 to Senate File 106, and if I'd call for the question.
You've heard the motion on Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1. Is there any discussion? Sensing there is no discussion and question being called, all those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to Senate File 106, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Amendment is adopted. We're back on the bill. Representative Harvey.
Mr. Chairman, I would call for the question.
Any further discussion on the bill? Question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Landon's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File number 106 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Senate File 106 has overwhelmingly passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File number 108. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 108, introduced by Senator Bebout, an act relating to the Wyoming Business Council long-term care facilities. This bill was referred to Committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Brechtel, Byrd, Harvey, Lockhart, Meyer, Moniz, Roscoe, Stubbs, Wanitzer, Dave, signed Representative Lockhart, Chairman. It was further referred to the Appropriations Committee, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Harshman, Jorgensen, Pedersen, Phelps, Stewart, signed Representative Berger, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 108 do pass, and I'd ask that the good representative from Shoshone explain the bill.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Mr. Chairman, I bring you Senate File 108. What it does is provides $125,000 to the Business Council for Community Block Grant for the purposes of funding planning grants under the Community Development Block Grant Program for existing or proposed long-term care facilities. And I put a handout in your box that it describes these greenhouse projects. There are several of them started around the state, Sheridan, Casper, Riverton, Jackson, and Lovell. There are several of these that could, I think there are four of those that are without a comprehensive feasibility study, and this would just allow one of those to apply for this grant. There hasn't been a new nursing home built in Wyoming since about 17 years, I'm told. If I'm wrong, I'd like to know about that, but that seems like a long time. And this bill would just allow that, and I'd be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any discussion on the bill? Question. Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Lockhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise... Oh, I'm sorry, Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I decided this is for nursing home care for the elderly, and I have a conflict.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Lockhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 108 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 108 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 39. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 39, introduced by Senator Massey, an act relating to the Child Health Care Insurance Program. This bill was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, which recommended that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Bonner, Davison, Escobel, Goggles, Hallinan, Harvey, Landon, Millen, no, Shepperson. Signed, Representative Landon, Chairman. Bill was further referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Harshman, Jorgensen, Pedersen, Philp, no, Stewart. Signed, Representative Berger, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Landon.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill or Senate File 39 do pass. There is a standing committee amendment, which I will move at this time, and I won't ask for any questions on this amendment. Mr. Speaker, I just think that we should vote for it and clear the desk.
You've heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Is there any discussion? Question having been called, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing committee amendment on Senate File number 39 has been adopted. We're back on the bill, Chairman Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For an explanation of the bill, I will turn the bill over to the good representative from the far western, southwestern corner of the state.
Representative Davison.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just repeat what Jack says and everybody vote aye. Actually, I will explain the bill. It's an act relating to the Child Health Insurance Program. It increases the maximum family income level for eligibility in the program, and it authorizes state funding for coverage as specified, authorizing families or guardians with higher incomes to buy program coverage for their children, providing appropriations and authorizing a position and providing for an effective date. What this bill does is currently Wyoming's Kid Care offers health coverage to children who live in families with incomes of up to 200% of the federal poverty level. This bill would cover approximately 3,700 more children who live in households with incomes up to 300% of the federal poverty level. And what I really want you to focus on, everyone got this yellow or gold sheet from AARP. And if you go down to the fourth dot there, it says, this bill allows the Department of Health the ability to charge a sliding scale copayment for program participants with incomes between 200 and 300% of the federal poverty level. And the next one says, a child whose family member, whose family income is from 250% of the federal poverty level to 300% will not be eligible for this program. If the child is eligible for coverage under a group health insurance plan offered by an employer of the child's family member. This is a really common sense, practical approach to providing affordable and essential health care to those who need it the most. And with that, I'll stand for questions.
Representative Teeter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a few questions. What is currently 300% of poverty? I have some real concerns about the long-term viability of starting a program like this. We are headed into uncharted waters financially, and this could turn into a $2 billion a year program if we continue to expand this sort of coverage. I think we should have some serious caution on this last day, last bill of general file, and I would urge you to vote no. And I'd like the answer to my question as to what 300% of poverty is.
Representative Hales.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this is a real, real bargain. If you look at the figures, we're going to cover 3,700 more children for under $100,000 a year. And I don't know where you can get that kind of a bargain. In the testimony we heard the other night, some of the families, depending upon their income, will also be charged $40 per child. There will also be a monthly charge for insurance for a family, anywhere from $300 to $500. So it's not a giveaway program. I think it's just a really great deal to cover that many kids for that amount of money.
Chairman Landon.
Mr. Chairman, the previous speaker just brought one of my concerns to the fore. Is the math doesn't add up. You cannot do that. You cannot provide insurance that costs $200 a month per kid for 3,700 people for $100,000. I think that's one of the fatal flaws that this bill fails to address. Another concern that I have in this bill starts at the bottom of page 3 and goes over to the top of page 4. And that's where families that have over 300% of the federal poverty level can purchase coverage from this program. This actually suffers from one of the problems that Senate File 24 suffered from. We know that these insurance programs pay below what the doctors need to charge for the usual and customary care. So one of the problems is, and I don't have the solution yet, but we're working on this, is one of the problems is, if the government programs don't pay enough, then it has to be offset by private payers and private insurance companies. And that's one of the things that we need to figure out how to address, and this bill doesn't do it, unfortunately. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just some caution to the body. You know, we've talked about the financial situation and the need to proceed with caution. And those of you who haven't, you know, been here before, you know, we're already doing this program, and this is an expansion by two steps. And I guess some of my questions are, you know, some of the literature that's been handed out talks about family size, and I don't know if you say two, if that means two children, one parent, one child, or what exactly that means. But, you know, the way I read this, if you expand this, you expand to level one, you expand to level two, a family size of two would be eligible if they were making somewhere less than, I don't know, $42,000 a year. And so I don't... you know, it just seems like it expands it too far into those areas where folks should be able to budget on their own to buy health insurance. We have the program now. It's at 200% of federal poverty level, and to expand it at this time I think is somewhat questionable. And I'd also like to know as a percentage how many more children this will serve at level one and level two.
Representative Teeters.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The average size family in the state of Wyoming is family of four, and for a family of four, we're looking at a threshold of $63,000. We are literally taking this program from needs-based to a giveaway. So I think the body needs to be aware of that, and I would urge you to vote no.
Representative Harvey.
Mr. Chairman, if I could answer some of the questions. A family of four at 300% of poverty is $5,500. And when you are at that level, at 300% of federal poverty level, you pay. This is not free for you then. You now pay for the services that you get. Another question was, if there's a family of two, what does that mean? That just exactly that, not just two kids, but a parent and a child. It's two people living in the household.
Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To start with, this is one of the programs that while I was going door to door that people in my community talked incredibly favorably about, often called SCHIP or Kid Care, the ability to have their children covered by health insurance when they couldn't afford it themselves. Second, as we move into a recession, this is the kind of program that gives our families and our communities comfort that their children can be covered by insurance that they may be losing if they're temporarily out of work. And I'd like to end my comments with mentioning that the other night I attended a reception that was offered for people in this body by an organization that, in all honesty, doesn't like government programs at all. And that was the premise of this organization. And the speaker who spoke on health transparency spoke about SCHIP and had to tell us and make the conclusion that SCHIP works in Wyoming. You know, he doesn't believe that it works elsewhere, but that it absolutely works in Wyoming. So here we have a program that is doing exactly what it's designed to do, which is to get more children on health insurance. Thank you.
Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't want to belabor the point, but this bill allows the Department of Health to the ability to charge a sliding scale. It's not a giveaway. It's a co-payment program. It also makes if there is another insurance available, then they don't qualify for this program. So remember those two important parts, and I would urge your yes vote on this. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just, you know, they pointed out that for a family size of four, so that could be two adults and two kids, the $5,500, that's per month. That's $66,000 a year. And I'm sure a lot of people that make that kind of money would love to have a monthly premium for health insurance of $50 per child. But if we can afford this, or if you think we can afford this, for somebody or a family that makes that kind of money, where do you draw the line, especially in the financial times we are? I would urge the body to exercise caution. We have this program in place now. It's up to 200% of federal poverty level. And if you go beyond this, if you're offering this up to $66,000 per year for a family of four, where does that stop?
Representative Jorgensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's quite fortunate that we have this as the last bill we're going to deal with, because this really brings us back to where we've been, where we've tried to go today with our own self-developed health care program. And I think the discussion that was had around that previous attempt this afternoon demonstrates the complexity of these issues. And this is a program that's a partnership with the federal government. They pay their half. We pay our half. It's been successful. It's very successful in this state. It's successful in other states. And if we are not able to add to existing effective programs that are demonstrated, and don't have the problems that were pointed out in our previous discussion. We ought to do it. The thing that continues to impress me or depress me about health care is we pretend that we shouldn't pay for these things without acknowledging that all the health care costs are borne by society now, often in uneven ways, because of cost shifting, which has been referred to earlier today. So at some point, we need to face up to it. This is a very rational step to take to improve the health of our children, particularly in the areas of preventive health. This does what we were trying to do or said we were trying to do with a previous bill. I urge you to support Senate File 39. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before the good member of the Appropriations Committee from Jackson leaves the podium, I wonder if he could reflect for me for a second. I recall my original vote on SCHIP and creating the program originally, and that it was a tough vote, and there was lots of sentiment on the floor that, here we are. It's the nose under the tent and every other thing you can think of. In respect to the program that we have now, what is the effectiveness of the program and the cost benefit of that program as we now think of expanding it further? And I think for the second time, expanding it further.
You've got to love camel's noses anywhere. Representative Jorgensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sure they're warm and wet. I don't have the numbers, Mr. Speaker, for that, but let me recite what I recall from the last six years in appropriations. When I first got on the committee, those folks would come and report to us from the Department of Health that they'd covered and found, if you will, so many more eligible children. And our comment was almost universal. Why did you find so many? Because of the cost that was implied by finding folks who are eligible to be covered. That is no longer our initial reaction. It has demonstrated its help, its usefulness. The group is the Department of Health. Folks in the Department of Health who deal with it are becoming more aggressive about identifying folks eligible, and they gave us numbers the other day, Mr. Speaker, and I'd be glad to bring them on second reading and go over them in depth or get them around to everyone. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chairman Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to share with the body recollections also, because the good speaker and I were both on the floor, I think, as freshmen when this idea came up. And it at that time, it was very contentious. We had a conservative legislature on both sides, and this was new territory. But we went forward with this, and we felt good about it at that time, and I think both the speaker and I advocated for it. We wanted to make sure there was a safety net for children in this state, that they could have insurance and get health care. And we advocated for it, and we were successful. We started out, this program started with an eligibility of 135% of poverty level. We felt, and like I say, that was where we could get the body to agree that a safety net made sense for the children in Wyoming. Over the years, we saw that go up 150%, 185%, up to 200%. And I still think you could advocate that as being a safety net. I don't think that we're not saying that hasn't reached a level that the people in Wyoming want. Right now, 50% of the children who have the availability of having Medicaid, I think actually it's slightly over, but not much over, and SHIPs, it's my understanding that they are enrolled in one of those programs. For some reason, there's a number of parents that don't enroll their children in these programs, and I'm not sure why. The statistics that I can remember is that when they did a survey of children who would be available for this program between 250 and 300%, they estimated that there was 4 to 7% of the children in that range who would be avail themselves of this program. What gratifying news. That told us that most of the children in the state of Wyoming are having health care provided, and most likely that's through programs that employers offer to their patrons. But I can also tell you that children's health insurance is not near as expensive as adult health insurance, and I remember we used to provide that for our children when they were small. So I really think that that we have taken care of the safety net, and I'm reluctant to go on further with this. I'm reluctant because like we said earlier, and so I won't dwell on this, is this program does not pay its share. And because of that is we pass a hidden tax onto every premium payer and on every private payer whenever we pass one of these. And so I'm just not convinced that we're really going to be doing that much good, helping that many families it appears to me that our safety net is in place and there's not a huge demand for this. So on and against the bill.
Representative Gilmore.
Mr. Chairman, I thought I probably wouldn't get back up here again, especially after I gave out my secret business plan the last time I was up here. But you know what? We all campaigned, and I don't think any of us didn't hear about health care, especially this S-CHIP. I mean, that's been in my district in Natrona County, and I don't think it's any different than the rest of the state. It's an issue. Yeah, maybe you do want to add people that make a borderline too much money. But the truth is, this is our last shot at doing anything for health care this session. Everything that's come across, we've pretty much killed. Senate File 24 was a demonstration project that we were going to pay for out of tobacco money. And what are we going to go home and tell our constituents? We did provide you some green signs along the interstate with that tobacco money, but that's pretty much all we've done. So I'm on and for this bill.
Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know the hour is late, and I know many of you have strong feelings about this, but the objections I'm hearing are that choke number of 300%. Normally, however, if this was earlier in the session, what we'd do is we'd have the opportunity to debate it further. We'd have the opportunity to say, well, what does it mean if we just increase it from 200% to 250%? But people are leaping immediately to the 300% and saying, okay, no. The bill as it's presented is for $75,000 to insure 3,700 more kids in Wyoming. Now, you may not agree with the 300%, and I may be with you on that, but would you agree that it's worth discussing it one more day? The concept that you can, for $75,000, insure 3,700 more kids in this state. I'll share one story with you, and that is a friend of mine who runs a preschool wanted, there was an outstanding worker that she had, and she wanted to promote her. And she offered her more money, more hours to work, and this young woman said to her, I can't make more money. I want to improve my life. But if I do that, my child will no longer qualify for Medicaid, and I need insurance for my kid. There are people out in Wyoming who are choosing not to make more money simply so they can have insurance for their child. And that's who this bill is for those families who are working but make too much money to qualify for Medicaid. And we're not offering insurance for the whole family. We're offering insurance for their children. The federal government pays 65% of this. And so what I'm asking is that if we say yes today, it's not the third reading yes, it is the first reading yes, so that we can get all of the data to you and we can have an informed debate that obviously will take some time into some careful consideration. And for that reason, I would ask that you please support the bill today.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I reject the notion that we have done nothing in health care this session. We have a budget amendment for $2 million for Medicaid reimbursement. that something will happen to that in the budget reconciliation. We have $14 million new dollars to the Department of Health through a variety of projects. We continue to have Medicaid reimbursement reserves so we can take care of Medicaid increases, and we plan for those and we budget for those in the future. We've passed a bill today on the dental issue. What it comes down to me, is the cost-effectiveness and the cost-benefit that you receive. Well, certainly we'd like to provide health care or health insurance for as many children as possible. But on this one, and to hear the good chairman of the Labor Committee from Sheridan give his analysis based on his 10 years in this body, the very deliberate work he does, and we all know him not as someone who is a free spender at all, but someone who analyzes things carefully. But when it makes sense, he supports it in his mind. And I trust his judgment largely on this issue. And when he says to me that the incremental increase or the benefit isn't that great, I listen to that. But I'll make my own decision ultimately on it. But we are doing things. We try and do things all the time. The pilot project got farther this year than it got last year. It may get farther next year because I'm sure it will be back. Don't let anyone say to you that we don't try and do things on health care and on insurance. We do, and we try and do the right thing, and we'll continue to try and do that. Thank you.
Chairman Landon.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I hadn't intended to come up, but I wanted to take exception to that statement also. You know, we've made some great strides this session just in nursery payment, trying to strengthen that system, the emergency medical system, improvements, genetic disease testing for children. I could go through quite a list here of things that we've done. And then there's a whole list of things in the budget, and I think that we have in this state stepped up and provided a safety net as good and a proper that we should do, and so it is that kind of incremental thing, incremental, and the question really boils down to, are we going to do more things to increase the size of government insurance, or are we going to do things that support the private system and support the free market? And that's really where the only drivers to efficiency, to some creativity, and to some cost control are going to come from. And so I just urge the body to know that we have a good safety net out there for children, and that incremental increases like this are not going to, they might make us feel good, but they are not going to help the healthcare system overall.
Representative Jorgensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I like to think that I'm as frugal an expenditor as anyone in this room. And if anyone questions that, just go look at the record. But I appreciate as much as anyone in this room, and I think we all do, the thorough work of the good chairman of the Labor Committee. But a comment that there's a hidden tax somehow that we pay when we participate in these programs, it's not a hidden tax. The default when someone is not covered is they go to the emergency room. Somebody pays for that. That costs more than preventive health care. That's a demonstrable comparison. So the hidden tax is that we all assume, as a society, the ultimate costs of health care, particularly issues which could have been identified and treated with preventive care. That's why dealing with children is so important. I urge you to maintain support for this bill, Senate File 39, and I think it would be an appropriate ending for this session, were we to do so. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there anyone else in the body who has not spoken on this bill who wants to? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Landon's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 39 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 39, where is that card here? Senate File, pursuant to House Rule 10.5B, the bill having failed a voice vote, a standing division vote is required. All those in favor, please stand. Those opposed, please stand. Having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson. Bagby.
Aye.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
No.
Blake.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Brechtel.
No.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
No.
Byrd.
Aye.
Kennedy.
No.
Carson.
Aye.
Childers.
No.
Cohey. Connolly,
aye.
Kraft,
aye.
Davison,
aye.
Dirks,
aye.
Edmonds,
no.
Esquivel excused, Gilmore,
aye.
Gingery,
no.
Goggles excused, Hales,
aye.
Hallinan,
no.
Hammonds,
aye.
Harshman excused, Harvey,
no.
Illaway,
no.
Yagi,
no.
Jorgensen,
aye.
Landon, Lockhart.
Aye.
Lubno.
No.
Madden.
No.
McKim.
No.
McComey excused. Mercer.
No.
Meyer.
Aye.
Miller excused. Millen.
Aye.
Moniz.
No.
Patton.
No.
Peasley.
No.
Pedersen.
No.
Peterson.
No.
Philp.
No.
Korberg.
No.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Simlick.
No.
Shepperson.
No.
Stewart.
No.
Stubson. Teeters,
no.
Thompson,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Wallace,
no.
Zwanitzer Dan, Zwanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
no.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 23 ayes, 32 noes, 5 excused.
Let's see, where is it here? Pursuant to House Rule 10.5B, Senate File Number 39, having failed a roll call vote, is indefinitely postponed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
The next bill's for... No. Just kidding. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ladies and gentlemen, good job today. And with that, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
Thank my lucky stars. You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carries.
Will the reading clerk please read the Committee of the Whole report? When? Will someone give the reading clerk the Committee of the Whole report?
No, that's fine.
Mr. Speaker, your committee of the whole having had under Consideration bills on general file. Beg leave to report as follows. Senate file 24, amended. And further amended. And further amended. Following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. Senate file 12, amended, recommended, do pass. Senate file 74, recommended, do pass. Senate file 98, recommended, do pass. Senate file 66, amended. Following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. Representative Lubnow announced a conflict of interest on 145. Recommended, do pass. House Bill, Senate File 112. Amended. Recommended, do pass. Senate File 90. Recommended, do pass. Senate File 89. Amended. Recommended, do pass. Senate File 134. Amended. Recommended, do pass. Senate File 114. Amended, recommended, do pass. Senate file 35, recommended, do pass. Senate file 93, amended, recommended, do pass. Senate file 106, amended and further amended, recommended, do pass. Senate file 108, recommended, do pass. Senate file 39, amended. Following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. Signed, Representative Lubnow, Chairman.
Representative Lubnow.
I move adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The Committee of the Whole report is adopted. Thank you, Representative Lubnow. We're at that order of business of signing of enrolled acts.
House Enrolled Act Number 76, being Original House Bill 279, an act relating to property, being enacted by legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 76, being Original House Bill Number 279. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act Number 77, being Original House Bill 134, an act relating to the Wyoming Wildlife and Natural Resource Funding Act, being enacted by legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 77, being Original House Bill Number 134. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act Number 78, being Original House Bill 183, an act relating to educational assistance for National Guard members, being enacted by legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 78, being Original House Bill Number 183. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act Number 79, being Original House Bill 236, an act relating to school finance, being enacted by legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 79, being Original House Bill Number 236. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act Number 80, being Original House Bill 255, an act relating to school districts, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 80, being Original House Bill Number 255. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act 81, being Original House Bill 281, an act relating to the administration of government, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 81, being Original House Bill Number 281. I have so signed.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 53, being Original Senate File Number 72, an act relating to corporations, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Now this, ladies and gentlemen, is a bill. All inch and a quarter of it. I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 53, Senate Enrolled Act Number 53, being Original Senate File Number 72. I have so signed.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 54, being Original Senate File 48, an act relating to game and fish, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 54, being Original Senate File Number 48. I have so signed.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 55, being Original Senate File 32, an act relating to livestock, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 55, being Original Senate File Number 32. I have so signed. Messages from the Senate.
Message 404, Mr. Speaker. The Senate did concur on House amendments to the bills listed below by the vote indicated. Senate File 72, Corporations Act Amendments. Ayes 30, no 0. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 405, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 114, Community College Amendments. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in amended form as follows by the vote indicated, ayes 20, noes 10. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 406, Mr. Speaker. The bills listed below failed to pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 125, Establishment of Highways. Ayes 14, no 16. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 407, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 262, Very Rare and Uncommon Areas. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 17, noes 13. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 408, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 279, Statements of Consideration Review, ayes 30, no 0. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 409, Mr. Speaker, the President appointed Senate conferees to meet with a like committee, number 1, from the House on amendments to House Bill 288. The Senate conferees are Senator Bebout, Chairman, Senator Geis, Senator Schiffer. Signed, Diane Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 410. Mr. Speaker, the President appointed Senate conferees to meet with a like committee number 1 from the House on amendments to House Bill 39. The Senate conferees are Senator Case, Chairman, Senator Johnson, Senator Hastert. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 411, Mr. Speaker, the President appointed Senate conferees to meet with a like committee number 1 from the House on amendments to House Bill 97. The Senate conferees are Senator Perkins, Chairman, Senator Geis, Senator Vasey. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Committee announcements. Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I really had two things, personal privilege.
Please proceed.
One, I think you heard the pitch from Lori and I earlier. I would really appreciate all of those who can and will contribute to the Race for the Cure. Please get the information to either Lori or I. We're going to run out of time next week, and you don't want me bugging every day. And we want to do what we've done in the past, and that's show our commitment to stomping out breast cancer. A second item, I forgot to announce the legislative prayer breakfast last Wednesday, and we had one on Thursday. We'll have one next Thursday, and it'll be a former Speaker of the House, Bill McElveen, and he does a wonderful job.
Any other committee announcements? Chairman Cohey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Conference Committee on House Bill 39 will meet at 9 a.m. Monday, that's the 2nd of March, in room S-19 with the Senate counterpart.
Any other committee announcements? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk, but we do have, after we adjourn, we will have a rendition of Cowboy Cowgirl Joe. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that we adjourn until Monday. Boy, what day is that? March 2nd, 2009 at 10 a.m.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The House is adjourned until Monday, March 2nd at 10 a.m.